Welcome back, Martini Giant fans. This is episode number 138, which is Westworld from 1973. That is directed, of course, by Michael Crichton and, of course, starring Yul Brynner in a very interesting role. And we paired that with Ex Machina from 2014, directed by the now somewhat controversial Alex Garland. This is a fantastic movie. Obviously, this is about robotics. It's about AI. It's about how AI affects us. And of course, this is something that I think is very fascinating, but we also just talk about the concept of how people talk about these things and, how it's going to affect us today. I mean, how much of this is really going to be an issue, for us as a people, but also just the idea of filmmaking and, what that's about. A lot of things about how men act in the world, because both of these films seem to be very much sort of making a statement about men's actions and how men act macho or very male oriented. So love this, really cool stuff, really interesting episode, and I'm very excited that we're able to cover it. A couple of announcements. As you guys may have noticed, it's been a little hard to us to get our Saturdays going. We are very busy on some internal projects, which I am so excited to be able to talk to you about very near in the future. I can't talk about it right now, but there will be news about this. And yeah, we're doing something really fun together, so hopefully you guys will get more involved. But yeah, this is a really fun thing that we're doing, and at some point, we're going to want to let you guys know about it, so stay tuned for that. But for now, please enjoy episode number 138, which is Westworld and Ex Machina. Hey, Jay-Z's here. Okay, I know it's going to be... We're gonna jump into it now because he's on Norwegian time.
Okay, all right.
And so we gotta do that. Yeah. And speaking of Norway, one of our films was filmed in Norway, Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, very much beautifully shot in Norway.
So we will be talking about that. But unfortunately, I do think we should start with Westworld because this is kind of
that makes sense,
right?
Yep.
It's Westworld and Ex Machina. Wow. I hadn't seen Westworld in a long time. I remember it more as a kid.
Mm-hmm, sure.
I have so many feelings about it suddenly.
Terminator 2, are you talking about, or Westworld?
Westworld.
yeah.
Like, exactly.
I literally just watched these back to back before the show, which was great.
So did I.
that's not very professional.
Okay. It's terrible.
I crammed it in.
I was actually, because I've seen it a lot, I hadn't seen it in probably about 10 years or so. This is the first time I've seen it in widescreen, because every other time I've seen it like shitty TV. Yeah, like super cut off and really blurry. And so it was a brand new, it was like Westworld Super HD. It was actually pretty awesome.
And there's parts of it that I loved.
There's some great stuff in this movie.
Yes, there's a lot of shots that... It reminded me of Terminator 2.
Oh, yeah.
Styles of directors today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even in Ex Machina, using the corridors as a way to build tension.
Yes.
Like all that stuff. Like, and that's 1973.
Yeah, we can talk about Ex Machina in a bit, but I think you're right, Eric, that clearly the director of Ex Machina loves Westworld. Like there's a lot of nods to that movie. It was really interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Westworld is sort of like both a shitty B movie and a really interesting good movie.
That's right.
Like it's not like a good movie in and of itself. Like it's a mediocre movie.
It's like a TV movie.
It's a TV movie.
It starts off like Love Boat. They're about to go on a cruise.
It has fucking Dick Van Patten in it. So it's like, it's enough. Exactly. Like there's only like it's shot on a Western set that like and I'm just like, is this the same set they used in the Brady Bunch where the kid was putting the beans in the flashlight?
Yeah.
It's like I think it is.
Yeah.
Jim Backus is in the all that stuff.
But
yeah, it's very TV, but it is, it goes beyond TV. It's
interesting. The slow-mo stuff was awesome.
Oh, it's great. Very Peckinpah. Very, I was like this very, like it's weird in the jarring, mix of raw TV mid 70s, Brady Bunch style.
Right.
And then suddenly it goes to super violent Western slow motion a la Peckinpah. And it was really interesting. Like, I don't know if it was intentional, but it really worked.
There was definitely those clear Save the Cat beats that would like, okay, it's 11 minutes. It totally hit it.
Totally.
And it's like, you got it. But there was some really good
Yeah, there's some good ideas
stuff in it. Yeah.
And really, it clearly affected lots of filmmakers and storytellers.
It also had a little bit of – it was obviously influenced a little bit by 2001. Like the whole mm-hmm. Arrival process was very 2001. Yeah.
Do you fucking love – I forgot the opening shot. It's a bad effect, but it's an awesome image of the sunglasses.
Yeah, it's the one that we have – I think it's behind you right now in this, this thing.
It is so cool.
What's also
looking.
Very cool is the graphics.
Yes.
Yeah, on the screens.
Oh, the graphics are amazing.
Yeah. It's a very cool movie.
And if you look at the graphic, if you look at the graphics of the little triangles moving, mm-hmm. that, and then you look at Ex Machina and she draws exactly the same style.
Yeah, the same thing. Exactly. Exactly. So, can I quickly sketch this movie out for people?
Please
plot-wise?
Sketch it out.
Okay. Okay. So we'll go through it really quickly because I think a lot of people have seen these movies.
No, I don't think, I think that's the whole point is maybe they missed it.
that's true. I think people are familiar.
The movies. Yeah, they know of the movies. At the very least, they know of it.
Right. So Westworld, the original Westworld, 1973, directed by Michael Crichton. Michael Crichton is also a science fiction author who wrote Jurassic Park and a bunch of other stuff that you've seen turn into films. But he directed a lot of movies in both the 70s and 80s. Some of them were pretty okay, and Westworld is probably the most notable one. It's got Richard Benjamin, who is a goofy-looking mid-70s actor. It's got James Brolin, who is the father of Josh Brolin from Dune.
Yeah, he looks
and
the same. Like if you,
looks
if you
identical.
Didn't know, you don't, right. If you didn't know, he's like, wait same a minute, guy. I was the same guy in 1973.
Cloned. Yeah, exactly the same dude. And they play these dudes who have gone to a vacation at Westworld, much like the HBO show, obviously. That was,
which is very expensive.
Which is $1,000 a day, 1973.
I looked it up. $1,000 a day today, in 1973 today would be $7,500 a day.
Yeah, so pretty steep. I mean, that's sort of like just below Disneyland prices, but yes, it's Muslim.
So
it's the same.
I was thinking about this real quick. Because I'm going to interrupt you the way that you guys did before. Okay. So my friend Melissa, my coworker Melissa, she went to that Star Wars hotel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In Disneyland or Disney World that was like $5,000 a day.
That's insane.
It's Westworld.
That's fucking
If you
that's
think
amazing.
About it, Where it's totally place? Westworld.
It's Westworld.
They shut
yeah.
it down now, by the way.
Because they started killing guests.
No. No.
Clearly.
Because it was too expensive and no one was going. But it was a hotel. It was literally called the Star Wars Hotel or something like that, where you go there, you dress up as a character from Star Wars, and you have to develop your whole backstory.
Oh,
and it's like you're in Star Wars, but for
I think that will be true, but that's going to be true for like some weird VR experience. No one's going to actually pay fucking $7,000 to go to a hotel.
That's what I should
a
have
day?
Been.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
A day?
A day. $5,000 a day or whatever, you know, to stay there. Like it's insane.
So she got it at a massive discount because it was like the last week or something.
Like there are not that many Star Wars whales in the world to pay for
Star
that
Wars
hotel.
Whales. Star whales.
Star whales. Yeah, they overestimated that.
Okay, but in this particular one, there's three zones.
Westworld, Roman world, and medieval world.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And
Westworld
and
is where guys want to get to shoot people and be legally and be
yeah,
in that,
kill people legally, largely. Right. Roman
medieval
world,
world
gets
is for the romance that you have of the medieval.
Right.
And in sword world, so apparently where women want to go get screwed by men.
Yeah, basically. Like that's the sex world, right?
That's sex world.
Yeah. It's Caligula world.
Harold Lloyd estate too.
Yeah.
Green Gables or whatever.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Like it's really like, I think we'll get into the details on it, but it is awesome how they mess with your genre sensibilities in this movie. Like, and so like it starts off basically as an ad for Westworld. They play an ad for Westworld and it gets
so
right
cheesy.
Into. Yeah.
That ad,
right.
The
it
ad,
and it looks like a real ad from the 1970s. Like that's
it does,
a, like
but the people playing.
It's hokey
I
as
just
hell,
came
yeah.
from Westworld. It's great. Right. I got to shoot six people. I mean, not really. But it felt real.
But it's like that shit is like if you look up Disney ads from the 70s to go to Disney World, it's exactly like this.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
They absolutely nailed it.
I just
got
to ride
right?
on a new ride.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So like these two
Space
dudes.
Space Mountain is awesome.
they show up in Westworld. Richard Benjamin is the skinny, not very masculine one, and James Brolin is the macho one, right?
But James Brolin also had been there before.
He's been there before, yeah, and he's time. Like, just, he's into it, you know, just like, it's gonna be fun. Richard Benjamin is initially sort of resistant, like, that feels silly, I'm like in a costume and whatever. But
he's
soon,
going
he's
going through a divorce and all
he's going
shit.
Through a divorce and all this stuff, and he's a very sort of emasculated character, and that's what the struggle in the movie is, yeah. Right?
Is go there.
Until like,
a man.
Yes, right. He's going to man up. And so like the running theme, which I actually think is pretty interesting, right? Is like, it has a sort of deliverancey theme going on, right? Because deliverance is about a bunch of guys who want to show that they're real men, really experiencing nature. And then nature says, fuck you. Like you are a bunch of pretend people. Like you're not ready for this whatsoever. And Westworld kind of adds a dimension where James Brolin is the macho one, right? And he's just like, just act like a man, right? And he, in the first 20 minutes, gets killed.
That's when not first things, 20 minutes.
Well, first 20 minutes. Like, he, like, 40. He,
he's
yeah,
act
like,
two death.
He's the top of act two death, right? And that's when all the robots start going wrong and killing everybody in the park.
Right. Yeah.
And it's not a slow, subtle process. They all go bananas and they absolutely slaughter everyone.
And I think what the TV you got out of it was, is that you have the concerned scientist. There's something wrong with the moisture in the
right,
chipsets.
Right, right.
This could be bad. Should we close right. the place? No,
no
we need
it's
the
fine.
Money.
Just let it
and
run.
And then cut to. Yeah. Do, 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 do. So right. that was the TV kind of
that's
push.
That's the TV
you.
Aspect. And then well,
there's also Yul Brynner's character, who is totally the Terminator, as Eric
right.
said. Like,
right.
He's totally Terminator 2. Like, he just mm-hmm. looks.
He too, yeah, like totally. Looking the way they track him is the
yeah.
cop.
Yeah,
yeah totally,
totally
the cop.
Totally is the cop, right?
Right.
But I love the fact that, you know, they keep just like in a TV show, they keep getting shot and then they go down in the conveyor belts and repair
right.
them, right? Which is this hilarious thing. And then so he gets shot and everyone else is getting fixed for odd, weird errors. And what's wrong? It's like, actually, nothing's wrong with him. We're just going to add a more intelligent chip, better eyesight, better ears. It's like, whoa,
right.
hold on.
And, the, and much
while
like
everything
Michael,
else is going wrong, I wouldn't and, make this guy more dangerous.
And Michael Crichton's obsession in terms of his writing, right, is you know, technology that starts to get out, like nobody, no single person knows how the technology operates anymore. And it starts to develop problems that we can't track. You know, this is true in Andromeda Strand. This is true in Jurassic Park. It's true in like all of his stuff. And in Westworld, like something has gone wrong that's sort of spreading like a virus between all the machines.
And they don't define it at all.
They don't define it at all.
Right.
And which is kind of nice. I can think that's actually kind of great. Yeah. I'm glad that they don't get into the weeds on the tech. Right. Because like it starts to feel very much like AI today, where it's like large language models are a black box. Like you don't know what happens inside them. That's part of the design. And so the output is very surprising. And with this, like something starts to go wrong.
Well, they said they even said it. It was like we don't even know how half these things work. Part of them were designed by computers.
Yeah, exactly. And so it has that von Neumann problem of like once machines start making machines, then you don't really know how to deal with them anymore. And so things start to go wrong. And you know, the Richard Benjamin and Josh Brolin have been through a bunch of gunfights now, and like they're tired of it. They're like they've killed fucking this one cowboy like 10 times, and they're right. like, yeah, man, whatever.
And
you
they've
know,
had,
it's all
they've
dead
had
now.
Sex with robots at the
and all the fun stuff, right?
Right?
And it's starting to wear a little thin for them. You can tell, and they're hungover and they're walking down the middle of the street. And then Yul Brynner, the cowboy, he's from the Magnificent Seven, old cowboy character, right?
Yeah.
And he shows
up.
He's like the king and I. And he shows up. He's got the black hat on. He's like, draw. And they're like, oh, for Christ's sakes, this guy again. Let's kill him again. And
you should know that this whole time they were saying it's completely safe. There's no way you can be shot, right?
There's no way you can be shot.
Right. And so like he says, oh, how about if I accidentally, you know, one of the guys, just to put it in perspective, is like, what if I accidentally shoot one of the other guests? Like, cause I don't know that he's a guest. And it's like,
right.
go ahead and try. And he tries to shoot his friend and it won't shoot.
And
it's
it
like,
won't
there's
work.
A sensor
right.
that won't let you shoot a live person.
Right. So it has this relatively good internal consistency to the design of what happens in the movie, right? You know, like
sure.
the guns are also kind of robotic and they can sense whether it's a human or not and all this kind of jazz. And so they end up in the middle of this empty street on like the next morning.
Dan, pardon me for 1 second, Chris and Dan, I'm putting in the chat, the michaelcrichton.com has this whole kind of cool page on him making Westworld.
Oh, that's great. Awesome. Right? Yeah, go check it out.
It's so fun because it has the script, the original script scans.
Yeah, and, that's great.
It's fun.
And so they get into this duel, and Yul Brynner, cowboy robot, just shoots James Brolin down, kills him outright. Yeah. Right. And James Brolin is like, oh, I'm shot. And they look, and like Richard Benjamin's looking at him like, what the fuck is going on? Is this real? What's happening?
Oh, and he got bit by a snake today, which is also.
Yeah. Like, and earlier got bit by a rattlesnake. And he's like, it's not a real snake. He's like, of course it's not a real snake. And then all the computer guys are like, why, how did this happen? Blah, blah, blah. But they refused to shut the park down, a la Jurassic Park. Right. And so this is a very
Jurassic Park is just a repackaging.
It's a repackaging of Westworld. Absolutely. No, totally true. And so once he's dead, like Richard Benjamin doesn't know that already robots have started fucking going house everywhere in all of the worlds. Mm-hmm. And he is on the run from Yul Brynner for the rest of the movie. Like, and it just turns into a Western where the bad guy is hunting down the good guy in the Old West.
Right.
Like, and this is like a half an hour at least. And there's very little for a long time. There's like very little to break the illusion of being in a Western, right?
No, there is. There's plenty. That's the thing.
There's little sort of twists. So
it starts off total, running down the canyon kind of situation. Right. Oh,
but then it hits like the guy in the golf cart.
The guy in the golf cart, like trying to change tires. Like, you got to get out of here. The robots have gone crazy. And it's like,
wait, that's what's fun. Explain the whole. What's going on? Because
without a doubt, I mean, it's good. I think it's good.
Yeah, there were a lot of those devices in there that kind of pushed.
Well, I think what's really sort of fun about it is that like it's very easy to slip into the mindset of watching a Western, and you start I start accepting it as a Western if it goes on for more than three scenes, and then suddenly a dude in a golf cart shows up trying to change a tire. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, this is truly weird. Yeah. And like when he crosses over into Roman world.
Yeah. Like he's going running down a stream and then suddenly there's these Roman sculptures.
Yeah. And your head just goes, wait a second. I was watching a Western and then it disassembles into something else in a very like Mel Brooks, Blazing Saddles kind of way.
He just shot it like a fantasy.
It's great. Like, it's really terrific. And the thing that I love about the movie is that it isn't just the novelty of, like, robot, cowboys. It really messes with your head as a viewer in terms of the genre that you are plugging into. Like, it keeps on – it plays out as a Western and then fights again. It keeps on breaking the fourth wall of that Western for you over and over and over again. And
there was
so,
Jim Carrey movie, pardon me. Remember that? Something World?
One of the best movies ever made. It's Truman Show. It's incredible. Beautiful movie. Incredible movie. But yeah, there's a Truman Show element to it. And like, what I liked about it is like, it really is, we are in, like when we're in the movie, when we're watching a movie, we're in the amusement park. Like the movie itself is the amusement park for us.
Right.
And we get to pretend like we're in the Old West and whatnot, and all these things are happening. And then it shatters that. And it's one of the few movies that breaks the fourth wall without breaking the fourth wall. Like, it doesn't break the actual fourth wall. It breaks the fourth wall within the context of the film. And it makes me aware of my own situation without sort of messing up the movie itself. Like, I'm hyper aware of the movie's technique. At the same time, I never leave the movie as if it's a joke. And it's really interesting and like an artful twist to a very B movie idea. I think it's really, really terrific. Like, it's a strangely good movie for being such a weird B movie.
Interesting shot, but it doesn't work with the chasing through the West. But they do these wide shots, and you see how they're just kind of encased in the whole village.
Yeah.
Everything is just kind of parked into this kind of other area. So it's the Truman Show where he hits the sky and it's the wall.
Yeah. And Truman Show is great because like there's a thing. I love the Truman Show. And like I had an epiphany watching the Truman Show for like the 12th time. Right. There's a scene in the Truman Show where Jim Carrey is, he's already like very confused as to what's happening. Right. And his dad drowned when he was young, right? And we know he drowned. The guy didn't actually drown. He was trying to tell Truman that it was all fake, so they killed his character, as part of the Truman Show, right? But to Jim Carrey, it was a real experience, and his dad really died, and they wrote it into the story of the show. And so to get Jim Carrey back on board with believing what's happening, they have the actor who plays his dad come back, right? And he sees his dad, and he starts crying, and he goes and hugs his dad, and it's a super emotional scene. And in the middle of the scene, I'm like, wait a minute, I'm the one who's crying, and I'm crying because Jim Carrey, an actor, is pretending to be sad over seeing another actor he doesn't know is an actor. But the only one who's being faked out really is me.
Yeah.
Well, this happens to me at something like that, something similar concept. When we get to Ex Machina, it was similar things that I was thinking about with Ex Machina as well. But conceptually, this is a pretty cool. It's not that complicated.
No, it's very simple.
Westworld. Very simple.
Very simple. Yeah.
There was something about how it was filmed, how it was edited, that sort of broke it constantly from that TV look.
Yeah.
Because it very much feels like this might as well be an episode of Love Boat.
I mean, it's straight up Peckinpah when those gunfights go off.
But there's also some other weird angles and some strange – and Yul Brynner's got that.
He filmed it like a fantasy, though, they were talking about.
Yeah.
And it's like that's that kind of look for that period. You know, it's like – and even the art direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that let's see, when did Andromeda Strain come out?
71, right?
71. So he's actually influenced by the movie made out of his own novel, because this feels extremely Andromeda Strain. Like the photography, like when it gets into the weird sciencey stuff, like that feels exactly like the way that Robert Wise did Andromeda Strain, and has that strange, you know, super techno 70s tone. Like even the way they do the Pixel Vision camera, which was brand new for this movie. You know, like there's this weird, distant technical flavor to it.
Really, that was coolest. And that was the first time ever that there was a live action live action was mixed with computer graphics.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's the first composite ever done.
Yeah.
Or
CG really good. It's really cool. But yeah, I think that, cause I also watched the Westworld show, and the first season of Westworld is quite good on HBO, but, after that, the seasons kind of fall apart, and it's because it's too detailed and intellectual that it just gets sort of up its own ass after a while.
Too explainy.
That's why if you shoot it like TV, it has a broader audience, because you have to.
This is very simple. Yeah, it's because it's so simple and it's made of nothing but iconography. It feels like a much deeper experience. Like you're never questioning the setup because it's so. You know, it's such a simple setup that you just watch it like it's an example of itself, right?
Yeah.
It's not like you don't wonder about the economics of the Western towns in a John Wayne movie. Like you're watching a Western, so you're just plugged into it.
Oh, and this is totally like Western, right? It's like, it shows itself like, oh yeah, I'm a Western and all the tropes are there, you know, we have been having an obsession with Westerns recently. And so it's just really funny to see like, those exact tropes put in there.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know?
And it's awesome.
Here it is, I mean, drinking whiskey. Like, you know, and it's funny. They go to the bar, right?
Mm-hmm,
and the guy asks for a martini, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah, exactly. we do a similar thing in a project we're working on. It's very funny.
And he asks for a martini. He's like, no, you get a whiskey. And like,
oh, okay. Don't be so fancy. But I mean, like, that is.
Don't be so fancy.
It's like this is like what I really, this is the kind of thing that I love. What comes out of the simplicity is like, all you need is like these little twists to make your brain run on the concept, right? And so like it gives you these little breadcrumbs of the idea in a very simple context, and then lets you think about it, because there's plenty of time of just watching guys running around on horses. And like, so like when it has, like you have Brolin as the super macho character and Richard Benjamin is the sort of like the nerdy guy, right? In any other movie prior to this, you would not have a Richard Benjamin character in this. You'd have a Charlton Heston character who's like, I'm the tough guy who really understands what men are all about, right?
Well, that's what Brolin is in a way.
That's what, exactly.
But he's more Mr. Nice Guy.
They plug Brolin in as that role, right?
But that gets him killed.
To dismantle it. Like, it's great because like they plug him in and he's just like, the way to get by in the Western town is to literally act manly, as opposed to have any positive masculinity at all. Because it's just like, just act like a fucking douchebag.
That's what
he tells
the guy the whole time. It's like, yeah, been there, done that. It's like, just have fun with it, man. Get into a bar fight, whatever.
Like, like do all this stupid, shticky bullshit that you would expect. Like, that's like, act like man in the movies, like tough guy, right? And this is what gets his fucking ass shut off. Like, like, it's pretty great. I mean, just like this act coming up against actual danger, the MAGA style bullshit version of masculinity, like, doesn't work because it's a put on. Like, right. It's dress up. Like, Richard Benjamin is the nerd, but he actually has to fight
Jesus
for his
wants
fucking
you to
life.
Have an AK-47.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's dress up. That is dress up, you know, and like all this acting like a tough guy bullshit gets you killed and puts people in a bad situation. Richard Benjamin is the nerd who's just like,
I don't
shit, I'm really in trouble.
As much tough guy as just kind of like, he was very much like, yeah, just have fun with it, man. He was like relaxed surfer dude in a way. He didn't need to listen to the thing recording because I've done it before.
I'm here to lean into the stereotypes of the Western. Like, this is fun.
Yeah,
right?
But Eric, I agree with you. But at the same time, he's also the one's like, I dare you to shoot me.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So he's being tough guy that way. Like,
he's a stupid frat boy.
Frat boy is a tough guy sometimes.
That's what I mean. It's like the trope they're deconstructing is the idea of acting like a tough guy. And Brolin is very much he's not a jerk.
It's nothing will
he's
ever
like
happen
Thanos.
To me. He's feeling that nothing will ever happen to me. So don't worry.
Right. So like he feels very comfortable putting on this performance of nonsense macho-ness because it's just like a fun thing to do and this is the setting, right? And it's a put-on. It's an act, right? But it is a put-on. Like, actual real danger is real danger, and that's what Richard Benjamin is truly in. And so, like, and the next level beyond that is that I love the casting of Yul Brynner, who is actually quite a masculine person. He broadcasts very like real strength, right? And he is at the ebb of his career when he in order to get some money he takes this fucking shitty B movie, right? And when he's at the bar and these two mid-70s lame ass TV actors are like the stars of the fucking movie, and he's sitting there
he's not a lame ass TV actor. Richard Benjamin was Goodbye Columbus.
I'm talking from Yul Brynner's point of view, where he is the Magnificent Seven, right?
Right. Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Right. And so he's at the bar and he's being paid scale to be a fucking robot in a B movie. And
you're a robot in a Western. Okay,
great. And when he turns to them,
I like it because you do Westerns, right? You did Magnificent Seven.
Yeah, you used to do those old ones, right? And the fucking vitriol in his voice when he's just like, you're a little sloppy with your drink. Like, I'm just like, he fucking sells it so hard. And he's like, draw. You're like,
better get this boy a bib.
Yeah,
go back to your mama. Like,
this dude is dangerous because he's really pissed off. I mean, Yul Brynner is pissed off, you know, and it adds such awesome energy to this movie that you're just like, yeah, I'd be afraid of Yul Brynner. Like, you nuts? This guy's great.
Well, he is terrifying.
Yeah, he's great.
Like,
he walks in
and he walks like a robot. Okay, that's one thing.
There is a physicality. He was a carnival. He was a trapeze artist.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
and apparently so he's like 5'1".
Yeah, he's short, but you can tell he's short in the movie too.
Yeah, but he's from Russia, but he definitely has a physicality like a dancer.
Yeah,
and there was something, and it's just the way he walks and moves and
he's smooth. He's got you're right.
He's
got
a fucking badass man. There's no two ways.
A little bit of a Fred Astaire walk to him,
right? But it's like, I mean, it's a bigger distance between these two than if you had a movie where it was like, you know, Elliot Gould in 1973 versus Steve McQueen. Like, that'd be pretty strong. But Richard Benjamin versus Yul Brynner is like cartoonish. Like, Richard Benjamin's like little stick boy. And he's like, I'm getting a divorce and I don't know what to do with my life. And Yul Brynner's like, I'm going to shoot your face off. Deal with that.
I like a martini with a twist.
Exactly. That I like this really dry. Fancy, yeah, very, very, very fancy a drink in the middle of this old saloon. And like that, like I like that it sort of both celebrates the old school Westerns via Yul Brynner, sort of makes a commentary on the status of that, the strength of that performance and his kind of personality, versus the new 70s actors and TV actors. At the same time, it also dismantles the, like I said, the MAGA style performance of masculinity, and says,
you mean the alpha males, the tandem,
the
balls?
Alpha male bullshit stuff, right? And I'm just like there's, it's sort of like it splits it both ways very, very cleverly, in a way that I was really sort of satisfied with. I was like, this is a secretly smarter movie than it lets on.
Yeah. The other one that I love is, when she's, the servant in Medieval World. And
oh, yeah.
The guy tries
yeah.
to hit on her and is like, all right, let's, it's like, you don't know your ways, my lord. And she walks away and they're like, and you go back to the control room. It's like, oh no, she's refusing the advances of one of our guests. She's broken.
How come this woman is not acting like a woman should? Yeah, it's amazing. I'm like, no wonder they're fucking rebelling, you idiot. Like, how would you like to be the fucking robot in this situation? You want to kill everybody too.
Yeah.
And so like the meta aspect of it that is awesomely unsaid is that people are forced into roles all the time around you that you just sort of accept as their natural state, but maybe they don't want to be in that state and they may be very fucking angry at you. And I think that like, that's a brilliant, sci-fi treatment of real social stresses. Like, I think that that's like, it talks about sexism and negative masculinity and all sorts of stuff without talking about it. Like, Westworld, the show, would talk about that stuff, and it's intellectually interesting.
But it loses the audience.
But it loses the audience. Yeah,
have a
exactly.
broader message.
Yeah, this is a fucking Western.
He always
fun.
Reminded me of, like, I like Crichton, his books and his writing, but he's like Mamet, where his visual style is not as strong as his writing style.
I agree. Yeah, he's not a great director. Like,
what was the movie you and I did? Eric was out of town, but you and I did a movie about the guy whose brain brain.
Yeah, that's a shitty movie. It's from a Michael Crichton book. It's a bad movie. It's called The Terminal Man.
That's right.
The movie is almost unwatchably bad.
Almost unwatchable.
Yeah. The book is actually pretty good. It's actually
decent book. What's his name?
No, Richard Crenna, I believe.
No. Who's Crenna? The main guy in...
Wait, I'll look it up for you right now. I thought it was Richard Crenna, but it was a bad movie.
God,
I'll get it. I'm on it right now.
George Segal? Is it George Segal?
George Segal. I'm sorry. Yeah. George Segal.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And that's like, that's the wrong side of this flavor.
Right.
Like, it has a lot of the same filmic flares and a lot
but
of...
But didn't Crichton direct that too?
Let me look it up. I don't think he directed that.
There was some aspects of that story in here, but this was better done.
Yeah.
And like, it starts off with this cheesy ad. Also, by the way, it starts off super cropped in, so it's like a teeny. It looks like
a
TV
inside
of the screen.
He likes to do that as his delivery of a message, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true. That's a big thing for him.
And it's like here introduce you to the world immediately, and it's just so cheesy.
Yeah, it's
and you
so,
can tell
yeah, it's so
like,
fun.
These people are just like ugh.
So, okay, I have The Terminal Man. The Terminal Man is directed by Mike Hodges, who's actually a very good director. He did Get Carter.
I know.
But for some reason, Terminal Man just went sideways. He also did Flash Gordon. Fuck yeah. What a great movie.
Hedges? Yes.
Yeah. He's a very, very good director. But Terminal Man is just fucking, it's horrible. It's a really bad, slow, badly made movie. But Crichton had a real, like his books had that flavor. Andromeda Strain, the movie, set that vibe. And it's a really unique form of 70s sci-fi that hasn't really been replicated. Like, it's very, like you're saying, 2001 feeling. It's a weird mix of 2001 and what's the Peckinpah movie with the great gunfights?
Bad
famous. God, it's embarrassing.
It's where they kill everybody. It's
The Wild Bunch.
Yes.
The Wild Bunch. Yeah, so it's a mix of Wild Bunch and 2001. And
this movie cost $1.3 million.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. It sounds a little expensive.
For 1972.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, 1973 saw some really good TV movies. Like Don't Be Afraid of the Dark is from 1973, and that would scare the bejesus out of me. And I think
this is still iconic. I think a lot of people will recognize, they'll see that picture of Yul Brynner with his face or whatever coming off. They'll know, they'll say, oh, that's from that movie called Westworld. And a lot of people have never seen it.
Clever effect shots too.
Great effect shots.
Yeah, with the hand, the smoke behind it.
That's
so
awesome.
Cheap, but done well. I mean, in a sense, like.
And that fucking ending is straight up Terminator 1. Like, because it's just like they burn the robot.
I was watching this.
Back.
I was like,
yeah,
wait,
it's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing.
This is totally.
Because everyone always says, like, oh, you know, Cameron was influenced by Carpenter's Halloween. I'm like, Halloween was influenced by Westworld, dudes. Like, this is the first time you see that shit. That's hysterical.
It is.
Yeah. There was a lot of great practical stuff in here. Really cool.
Yeah. I thought, like, especially when they do the bloody gunfights, the squib timing is immaculate.
Right.
It's immaculate.
Well,
because they're doing this in slow motion, and the gun fires the moment the squib goes pow, like this, and it's awesome looking. It's paint, but it's amazing looking.
Yeah. But I also there's some long, like, and they used to love to do that in the 70s, long establishing shots inside of control rooms, mission controls.
Yes, yeah, they love that stuff.
Yeah,
Look at the technology, reel-to-reel tape machines, look at this stuff,
And 5, 6, 4, less.
And the thing is, I still love that shit. I love that stuff. I mean, because, like, one of my favorite sequences in Close Encounters is the air traffic control scene. It's loaded with that shit. It's awesome, just like... A1905, please. Fucking watch that shit all day. It's great.
Do you ever do that, by the way, on a plane? Because they used to have it on airplanes. I don't know if they still do, but there was back when you could tune into certain channels and stuff like that on airplanes, they used to have it so you could tune in to listen to the air traffic control.
Oh, listen to the thing. That's right.
While you're flying.
Yeah. Now they don't do that anymore.
They don't. Why?
We have been boarded by people with guns and we want. I think that there's a certain flow. There's in the 70s, almost more than any other time, like they would just, like, if I see like a. Any mid-70s B-movie that doesn't have, like, a motorcycle, a rattlesnake, like, it's just, like, an Evel Knievel influence. Like,
there's total Evel Knievel influence.
It has some really weird, very specific to the time elements to it. It's really funny. But it legitimately is an excellent B-movie, and I really think that, like, the only thing I would critique it for, really, is that it's a little padded. Like, I feel like this is probably an hour-long script that they're like, let's just draw out some of these riding shots a little bit, you know.
So they do that thing where they basically go, you know, they do a lot of role of people in the control room.
Yep.
They spend a lot of time repairing robots. Right.
Which,
by the way, is kind of interesting.
And the horse.
And weird.
Yeah, it's fun.
The robot horse thing.
The robot horse on the table is hilarious.
Is good. The robot snake with the tinfoil in its mouth.
Totally cheapest prop. They're like, who's got a dead snake around? Let's put
dead snake stuff in batteries and you're off to the races.
Yeah. They had a chicken and a dog also at the end of it. I don't know why there's a robot chicken.
Robot chicken, man. That's where the show came from, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is. It had to have.
Yeah, but so I just want to catch up in chat. We have a bunch of stuff from Dave 3D, awesome hit on Kings, which was me and McShane's first show after Deadwood. Great show. There will probably be no Terminator without Westworld. Perfect watch for this new AI world we're entering. I think that's one of the reasons we chose this.
These two things, yes.
Casey Ben has watched season one of Westworld, the show. Only I would say, Casey, stick to that. You're home free. Westworld, the show, hits a high note at the end of season one and then slowly turns to vapor. I think that's what happens there.
No, I think, stick to one season. Meaning, you should still watch this movie.
Oh, absolutely! Watch this. This movie's badass, man. I was I was genuinely surprised what a fun movie this was.
Yeah, Eric. I remember this from, you know, like the same thing as you, like watching it probably in the 80s and 90s on a TV, right? And I was like, yeah, but seeing it again, it was like with a new, fresh perspective, especially in light of everything we know today and all the things that are going on. It still has a. There's some lines in here that are relevant today.
They're still relevant. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like there's a nice general attitude towards, like, because they don't get deep into the specifics of how it works. Like, they don't date themselves in that way. There's lots of dated machinery, real tape and all that kind of stuff. But what they're talking about is complex AI problems. You're still like, nah, it's still a problem. Yeah. Like, that's still real. Like, once you
I think the weakness is too, is that they cast just really standard TV C-level actors. In the beginning. And it kind of cheapened it because the reactions and their
it's hammy.
The last guy to be interviewed was just so off. It was almost like he was a producer's brother.
Yeah, stuff is, like you said, it's straight off a Love Boat. Like, they just...
Yeah, and it just took it down. Like, it took it down. They didn't need to have five people to interview. They could have just had one good actor.
Yeah.
You know, talk
like just
about
start
it.
The ad going well, no, and then
because
hear
they
a
wanted
voiceover
to talk about as, Roman world, medieval world.
They want to intro.
Well, they could have
ad.
Just done that in the dialogue. The point is they a lot of not so good actors, and it just kind of, and even within the Roman world or the medieval world, the actors were, you know, not stellar. It was a little bit
Funky. Like I totally agree. Like these, like this, it has all the earmarks of being initially a TV movie. Like, I really believe that. Like, all the production is TV movie, the camera work is TV movie, except for certain sequences.
The dead horse is TV movie.
Everything is TV movie. And somehow, just before they went into production, they're like, Michael, can you get maybe 20 more pages in the script? And he's like, by tomorrow? Yeah. And then
we need something to introduce this. Like, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because they probably were like, I don't understand it. How do the people get to this world? People are not going to get it.
And we'll fight an uphill battle on that one, man. It's like, haven't we?
Yeah, because they do kind of explain it twice, right? They explain it in the TV interview, and they explain it on the hoverboard or whatever the hell.
In case you came to the movie late, here's what's going on. Yeah, exactly. Whereas you could just watch this and slowly get the idea. Like, this would be like, if you were to make a better movie out of this, like, no ad in the beginning, start it as a Western, let it roll out as a Western for like 10 minutes.
And then reveal
that. And then break it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I was hoping, I was actually watching this and I was like, how great would it be if they get in a fight and you realize it's not only robots, but they're actually just using prisoners too.
Oh yeah.
Because they're real people.
That's
like a real
prisoner. Actually really cool.
Right? Like, they shoot a guy in a bar just because he's like, fuck it, I'll shoot somebody. Yeah. And then the guy's really dying and he's struggling to die.
And you're like, wow, these robots are really unbelievable.
And then he puts his finger in maybe the wound. He's like, he's a real person.
Right.
And he's like, you know, if I made it through tonight, I can get eat first parole.
Oh,
that's a good movie all by itself.
Schwarzenegger film?
Oh, yeah, it's Running Man. Yeah, Running Man.
Yeah.
Another shitty movie, but still fun.
That thing, I was like, God, that'd be so great if they shoot real people. And then they really start to be like, dude, what is going on? I was a real person.
Well, the thing is, like, I think that's a terrific. I think that's kind of like what they should have done for the sequel instead of
for the series.
Yeah, right? Like, for the series, like, do some
the ethical thing of like using prisoners. Yeah. Like they do in Ukraine. They're using prisoners at the front lines.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, this is like anything where you add like where the tension itself is more physicalized. This is the thing that I came out of watching this movie with. I was just like, having watched all of Westworld, where it's like. The TV show, like, the first season is really, really good, but it's like, this is the show is simply an intellectual diddling exercise. Like, it's a bunch of people sitting around and talking about how smart these ideas are. And when I'm watching a movie, I want the tension to be physical. Like, I want to be physically scared for people in real situations. I don't want people sitting around and talking about the intellectual reasoning behind something. Well, I'll do that after the movie. Like, if the movie prompts me to think smart stuff, then that's wonderful. But don't back out of making a fucking great Western Like, and then, and this movie doesn't. This movie commits to making a really fun, shitty action movie first. And then it's also made up of all these ideas that you can't get out of your head after you've seen the film. And I think that's just better filmmaking.
I love when they go into medieval world. No, yeah. Roman world just looks like some Beverly Hills mansion.
Yeah. What'd you say it was, yeah. Eric? It was the fucking, the estate.
It is. The Harold Lloyd estate. Cause that's
the Harold Lloyd estate for sure.
And yeah. I love that estate. It's in Beverly, up on Bel Air.
Yeah. Right.
And it's so Harold Lloyd built it, and it's such a beautiful place. And right. he spent so much. We went broke,
right.
but he. I'll send it. Harold Lloyd to state. It Green
just
Acres.
Looks like decadence and not necessarily yeah. Roman.
Well, actually, no, this is. Yeah, like,
I'll put it in the chat, guys. It's Green Acres.
No, it's a good place. I've seen it in many movies. It's been
yeah. yeah it's one of my favorite L.A. homes. But it's called Green Acres.
I think they should remake this movie only in the style of this movie. I think that they should make a Westworld movie that is really like the Westworld movie as opposed to the Westworld TV show.
Why? Because they have it. It's called Westworld.
I know. But I mean, like, if you're going to do the work and have a fun robot movie, like, I think you can make a better movie out of Westworld than they did.
I think the first season of Westworld, like you said, is very good because it has great stuff.
Yeah.
It has a more contemporary vibe to it, a little more yeah. funkiness and weirdness to
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And the ending is spectacular. They do a yeah. really great rug pull in that show.
Terrific.
Yeah, but it's just that it really made me think about the difference. It's weird that we still have this difference between, even though like TV has reached, in a lot of ways, reached the production level of filmmaking, of making movies for movie theaters movies. Like, it still gets caught up into over-intellectualization of its topic because they have so much air to fill. And I'm like, you don't need all the talking. You just need high tension and real danger and physical action. Like, you come out of Unforgiven and you're going to be talking about the morals of, you know, guns and how to run a society. You'll be talking about that after the movie, but the movie itself is an action thriller, you know? And I think that that's just more like, that's like when the TV show does all the thinking for me, there's nothing left to think about. Whereas like Westworld doesn't do the thinking for me. It just puts the ideas on the table
and
makes them compelling.
This is a very common thing that's going on now, is that we explain things constantly,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
We explain things because we're
right.
worried, one, that the audience won't get it, or worse yet, that they would misinterpret what we're trying to say and cancel yeah. us.
We want to control how you interpret this thing.
Right, because like, I was like, you know, it's like,
it's almost like
the writers are afraid of being sued, so they explain yeah. everything in a fucking movie.
What happened to storytelling? Really, yeah, yeah. Like, let things be ambiguous and let them upset you and, you know, let yourself think on this stuff, yeah. you know, and put the ideas on the table for me to think about. And that's what's, and the thing is, like, not to go early on,
they do that on Ex Machina. They explain a lot.
Well, but it's a key difference. There's a lot of talking.
Yes.
Like, well, there's a key, like, because there's a lot of talking in Ex Machina, but the talking itself is the tension. Like, they're putting the ideas on the table and they're not solving them for you. Like, it's getting higher and higher tension because they're not there to dazzle you with how smart they are. They're there to turn words into combat and power struggles. And they put these ideas out that are very unanswerable, and it makes it very frightening. And so it's like I say the same thing all the time about Glengarry Glen Ross. Like, Glengarry Glen Ross is a great movie because it was directed, not only does it have an amazing cast, right? But it's directed by an action film, a literal action film director. And so the movie, even though it's wall-to-wall talk, they go into it saying, okay, so we're making an action film, and instead of guns, it's words. And so the tension is extremely high, and the stakes are extremely high all the time. And whereas you watch Westworld season 3, you're like, what are you talking about again? Like, what the fuck is this? Like, they're just spinning their noodle. And I'm just like, this may be really great when you're high, guys, but this isn't a story.
Well, they took a story too far.
Is it because they're trying to fill a long...
Yeah.
They took a story too far.
Yeah. Yeah,
We just discussed how Westworld, which is 90 minutes, was probably 30 minutes too long. And now you're going to make three seasons out of it on
three
HBO.
Three seasons. That is fucking, that's put a little too much water in the soup.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how
Speaking
that goes,
of water, I think it was really funny how he rescues the girl in medieval times and he's like, I'll get you some water. No water, no water. And he gives her water and she blows up because it's like, wait a minute.
Like,
I mean, you can't put water in a robot.
Yeah, like,
you don't
it's simultaneously, like, what's awesome in that scene, right? It's simultaneously
corny. It's like, oh,
don't
put your watch underwater, you know?
Yeah, it's like simultaneously corny and kind of doesn't work, but the image of her absolutely still and smoking as the camera dollies away.
That
like,
smoke, by the way,
that's
is
great
classic TV.
Behind me right here.
Like the way the smoke came up was classic TV in that period.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, like that is a straight up Hammer horror film's image.
I was thinking of you, Daniel, when he has sex with a prostitute, right?
Yeah,
and they're rolling.
Right.
They're doing a little rolling and a rolling and rolling.
Very
70s style lovemaking.
Yeah,
just,
yeah.
Apparently,
in
the
70s,
you just roll constantly in bed. That's how you.
And put it perfectly. We're watching this and goes like, this is like how little kids think this is.
Yeah.
Like, so, I don't know. They just roll around.
Finally, he's on top of her, right?
Right?
And they're hugging and she's got her arms around his back like this.
Yeah.
And her eyes open like, so you're reminded she's
that's
a robot.
TV. That,
yeah, dude, no, it would sci-fi Clute. That's what it is.
That's what
sci-fi.
I was going to say. It's Clute.
Science fiction
it's
Clute.
It's Clute. It's exactly. It's like, oh my God, it's Clute.
Angel.
Oh, she's going to go like, look at her watch.
Check her robot watch. It's a digital watch. Oh no. Yeah, it's fucking great, man. I said the same. I was watching it.
Apparently, water would kill her, but what he did to her won't.
Yeah, that's fine, I guess.
That's waterproof.
I guess so. They built it. Yeah, it's like that. That's the kind of stuff where it's just like it rides that perfect B movie edge where it's like, yes, this is trashy and silly, but the image is so basic and powerful that it just fucking works. Like if you're it's just,
it
I mean,
fun.
Like it's just great. It's so much fun. It's so much fun.
I also love how like you can't get hurt here, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My God. I got bit by a rattlesnake. Obviously, the rattlesnake is not venomous, so he's fine. But he just got two little puncture wounds, right?
Yeah, he's like, oh!
He's like, oh, no, we can't hurt the guest. But then, like, the next scene, they're enjoying a bar fight.
Like, and now it's a classic bar fight, goofy, like...
I was like, did they use part of this for Parallax View later on? I think it's the same scene.
It was so like classic, but I'm like, you're upset about two little puncture wounds in your arm. And that's like so bad that they did that, but getting, you know, hit in the face with a chair.
Right. Because like, well, and it's sort of awesome because like, that's the, like the difference between those two things is one, he is in control of, like, he's in a fight with men and that's like, he's enjoying it because it's like, let's, this melee action, right? He gets bit by a snake and he's like, oh, you're just like, I'm sure it hurts, but you know, it's a robot snake. Yeah. Like, this is just like getting your, finger caught in the door.
A little bit. Do you remember Victor Victoria?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great.
Victor
film.
Victoria, when he's like, you know, he's going dancing with her and he doesn't feel like a guy because he's with a man, woman, just a man, right? And so he goes to the bar to try to pick a fight to be a man.
Yeah, the man on up. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Like, and he orders milk.
Oh my God. So good.
Milk. Yeah. He's like, cow's milk or mother milk? How about your sister's?
It's so good. Oh,
and
God,
he just like,
smacks
him
funny.
In the face. It's like, and he gets into the fight just to prove that he's a man. And that's exactly what they do in this film, right?
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, and I really like, I think this is all keys together into the same B-movie atmosphere. Is like, why I love a great B-movie is because it's plugging right into the base of the brain. Like, it's delivering the goods and the imagery and the action. And it's like, it's really vital. And it may be dumb, but it's really, really vital. And this movie has the smarts to both give you that and give you a context to later think and overanalyze it because it's fun, but it doesn't get in the way. Like, and I think that's also what makes Terminator great. Like, Terminator is a really, like, leaves you thinking really hard about a lot of stuff.
And it scares you.
But when you're watching it, it's scary as fuck. Yeah. Like, it doesn't stop being a great action movie because it wants to be smart for you. Yeah.
I also love Yul Brynner's character because, like, he's programmed for one thing.
Yeah.
Pissing you off.
Yeah.
Instigating a fight.
Get him get this man a bib. Like, it's terrific.
Go back
it's
to terrific. Your mama.
Go back to your mama.
He only says like four things in the whole
movie. What a
he was
blast.
So angry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I love Brenner. I think he's a majorly underrated actor. I love him in everything he was in. But this is, it's funny that like he did this, you know, for like $20 and a bottle of beer. And like, this is the thing that he will be remembered for. Like, it's not going to be King and I. People don't even remember King and I now.
It's kind of like Alec Guinness in Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, the Lady Killers. What's that? Obi-Wan Kenobi. Obi-Wan
Kenobi. Yeah.
Like, nothing galled
him. Yeah, that was that kind of period. Where
he played 12 roles in that? I didn't know. Yeah.
Who cares? Force be with you. Like, he was bullshit, man, cashing that giant check. He'd be like, oh, Christ, what's happened?
But the 70s had a lot of those great actors getting old who were doing these kind of roles just for the cash.
No, yeah,
and
of course.
It was a total roll of the dice, whether it's, you know.
Yep.
You know, Gene Hackman in Domino Principle.
Right. Domino. God bless. Possibly the greatest episode of Martini Giant of all time right there.
I think. Well, yeah, and it was a watch party of all. So it's lost in the tomorrow and the ether.
Incredible. Legendary.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think what I will say in favor of television is at least older actors now get to have a valuable second life on TV. Like, now if you're doing TV, it's largely classy and good. Like, if you have like a, you know, like used to be bigger star can now come back and headline a television show and everyone's like, oh, that's terrific. You know, like Jodie Foster coming back for True Detective and stuff like that. Oh, it's largely great. I do want to warn you, they kind of fumble the very end, but it is it's a very, very good season.
Jodie Foster, she's terrific. Diane, which looks pretty.
Yeah, it's a great comeback for her. It's really, really good, and she was great in that. Another, it was a pretty good movie, but she was dynamite. And that's was that a Netflix movie? I can't remember. Apple TV, yeah, maybe.
Which
but
one?
Yeah, Naiad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, like she hadn't done anything really of major note in some time, and now she gets the comeback to do that stuff and headline a show. It's really good.
I was at the VES Awards, and that was one of the big things.
How was that?
It was good. They honored William Shatner, believe it or not.
Mm. Go Bill. Who doesn't love Bill?
93.
Was he there?
Yeah.
He's 93 years old.
Nice. He was there the whole time, sitting. He was sitting. That's my wife.
He's 93?
He's 93.
Nice. Nice.
My wife happened to be at one of the nicer tables because her company has a big sponsor to VES. So she was sitting at a table right next to William Shatner.
Oh, that's
and
pretty
he
great.
He sat
man.
There the whole time. He got up on stage, gave us a little talk, which was a weird talk because it's William Shatner.
Yeah, he's weird.
And then he took off because he took off because he's going to go on a Antarctica exhibition or whatever.
He is living his life, man. That guy is fucking going for it.
No, he's like, going for it, man. He was in space last year.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, whatever.
I don't give a shit. Yeah. I might as well roll the dice.
What was really funny at the VS is that Seth MacFarlane was the guy who introduced the award for William Shatner. And he was saying a bunch of jokes, and none of them were landing.
Like nothing landed. That was hysterical.
And they were actually pretty good jokes. It just was the wrong crowd, the wrong person.
Who was doing this?
Seth MacFarlane.
That's funny. Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, he's funny. He's very funny, obviously.
I'm impressed with Shatner because, like, by now he should be like that dude from Star Trek who's riding around the box with the blinking light going doot. Dude, and that's all he can do. But instead, he's literally going to space.
He's just
all the weird, crazy shit William that he talks on Twitter. Who cares?
Like, and why is the VES giving William Shatner an honorary award?
Because he showed up.
I think that's all it is.
Yeah. I mean they usually give it to a big director that does a lot of visual effects, which ironic, this is one of the things that upset me about the VES. I'm going to be up front. Here's some, my podcast, I can say what I want.
Right on.
But I left the VES, as I think a bunch of us did, during the Life of Pi days. We were very upset about the reaction towards what was going on. I'll just say the VES now is, I'm going to for lack of a better word, under new management. Some of the people, new people are involved, and Kim Davidson is one of the new heads of that. Kim was one of the founders of Side Effects, so Houdini. He is super cool. I really, really, really like him. And he's been on my podcast, by the way, if you want to listen to CG Garage. He's on that one.
Awesome.
And I'm definitely thinking about rejoining the VES.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad that's Miss Ship. Now that's better.
Yeah,
that's better.
The problem I have with the event last night or Wednesday is that it was actually just overbooked. There was so many people there.
Right.
And they actually scaled back a bunch of things, and it was they scaled back too much.
Oh, so, interesting.
It was just very crowded.
Right. Too much escargot.
Too much escargot. Oh, I talked to Kevin Mack the other day, too.
Oh, yeah. How's he doing?
He's doing good. And I told him, by the way, you know, we made a t-shirt out of what you're saying. And he says, you know, I can never eat escargot again because of that experience.
It's ruined forever. That's a great one, man. Yeah. Too much escargot.
Escargot. He's looking forward to doing.
Later, there are snails all over her plate.
our little project that we're working on that we've been hinting at here and there, he's going to be a part of it.
It's very exciting. Kevin Mack. What a kind and inspiring gentleman.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this company. He's also a big fan of creativity and AI.
Yes, true.
He talks about you a lot, Eric. He loves your work. You've got the same attitude about AI that he does, creatively speaking. And so he's always sort of like, that's so cool what Eric's doing. Like, you know, he thinks the same way and he keeps talking. He's great. He's really great.
Good soul.
Good soul. All right. So where were we? We were on Westworld. I think we did a good coverage on that one.
Yeah. Oh, no. Also, more from the chat. We got Capricorn 1 has this filmic feel, too. I love it. Have we done Capricorn 1? That's a great movie.
We have not.
That's a good movie.
Didn't we do it as a watch party?
I think we did it as a watch party. That movie fucking rules, dude. Yeah, like, that's especially the plane stunts in the end are some of the best stunt flying I have ever seen in my life. Absolutely out of control. I remember being shocked watching it when we were watching it as a watch party. I was like, holy shit. Like, this is bananas. But that's by Peter Hines.
Just the way you said, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Shit.
I sound like me.
Wow.
who's the guy who's in all the old Westerns? He's the wall-eyed Western character. He's in Once Upon a Time in the West. What's that guy's name?
Oh, that guy.
That's what I sounded like for a second. I hope I grow old into that being Jackie Lamb. I hope I grow up to be Jackie Lamb.
Jackie Lamb.
Whoa. Let's see. Dave 3D Guy also says, yes, directing the audience's interpretation. You could never make Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer today because no on-screen character actively condemns the killer's choices.
It's true.
This is very, very true. Very, very true. Same thing in Taxi Driver. And Shatner's in better shape. Than men 30 years his junior. I think that's true, especially seeing as though I am one of those men. I am definitely not in that ship. I could not go to space.
William Shatner could outrun me, and he's 93.
That's how it is. But yes, Westworld, highly recommend if you ate $3 on Amazon.
Honestly speaking, it's a film that I think, like, you remember it as that cheesy film you used to watch on Saturday afternoons on.
And it is.
But if you watch the HD version on your nice TV, and it's actually pretty good. Like, wait a minute, this is actually good.
It's kind of dope. Yeah. Well, like I said, man, like there's some movies.
The action and the stunt work is some of it's really dopey. Like the bar fight.
Yeah, it's really silly.
Like, was great too.
Yeah, but
the hunting down was great.
Yeah,
when he hunts him down.
Yeah, it's really grim and weird. It's really intense, and it's a lot of fun, man. Like, as like there are other like I said, I really think this is a TV movie. When I brought up Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, if people haven't seen Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, definitely see the original Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. It's terrific. And movies like Gargoyles, where I was like, Gargoyles is another TV movie. You watch it again, you're like, okay, this is super shitty, but also kind of scary. And like, I don't know if they make movies like that anymore. Like, I don't think, is there an equivalent to Westworld today? Like, where you're like, this is bad, but also good. I mean, Westworld is bad, but yeah, like, this is lo-fi, but also really, really good.
Lo-fi, good. today on
Domino
TV.
Principle.
Domino Principle, man. I wish that they
yes,
should be
named. I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. All the Equalizers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good point. Great point.
With Denzel Washington.
Yeah, with Denzel. Those are awesome. Yeah, those are awesome.
But it's still the same old tropes and, you know, all that stuff.
Same shtick, but he's
great. Same shtick, but it's great.
He is fucking
and even Driven or Liam Neeson in Taken.
I would say Liam Neeson's entire B-movie oeuvre is terrific.
Transporter?
Transporter movies, yeah, agreed. Jason Statham in general, I think, is possibly the best B-movie action star we got.
Speaking of B movies, have you seen The Beekeeper?
I have not. I've told it's actually really fun.
Really? I kind of want to see it.
Like, I kind of want to see it. I bet it's really
actually,
trashy.
I was weirdly, I was attracted by the poster. I think the poster's awesome.
It's funny, like, there's no way that that's not stupid, but I bet it's super fun. So stupid.
Cool. He's a beekeeper.
That's my bet. I love that shit, dude. Like, I honestly
first
love
of all,
all
he's
of
taking down telemarketers.
Telemarketers. Who doesn't want to see
or
this?
Scammers or phone scammers.
Cuts off their finger and throws them over a bridge. This is what you want to see happen. It's not what you they don't want it legally to happen, but you do want to fantasize about it.
Have you watched on YouTube there's all these channels of guys who hack into people that are scamming people in India?
I've been following those guys for years on YouTube. Yeah. I love them.
Yeah. They go in and they're really like, great. I know your name. They hack into their CCTVs. It's like
There's actually a terrific, if you listen to podcasts, there's a great podcast that's now done with called Reply All.
Oh, yeah.
And they Reply did All's an great. Episode, great, great show. They did a show where they investigated a scam operation out of India, and it got really fucking scary.
Yeah, like, well, there's one that Mark Rober did with a bunch of other guys, and it got kind of dangerous.
Yeah, like these are real. This is like a real, you know, mafia style.
I saw one a couple months ago because when I work out, I just go rabbit hole with YouTube, and I started following this guy, and he did. He's got a great show, and he
is it the guy with the blue hair?
No, he went and tracked down like scammers in India. But on the one that I saw, and I'll dig it up and I'll share with you guys somehow. We'll do it on Discord or something. All he had was that they called – he got basically something about tracking them down, and then he found out to find the city. It was like how the guy – something – he saw empty rental space, and they hunted all the rental space. And then one of the guys went on camera, but quickly, and he went into.
They saw the number.
The number, and then he tracked it down to a rental property. And then when they opened the door, the reflection in the door was the company next door on the same floor. Yes. And they found that, and then he sent his friend over. But it was remarkable.
This Russian guy who's part of that, the busting group. That's pretty amazing. Yeah, I've seen that. It's really good.
Awesome.
Yeah, but that's
like reflections and out the window, there's a little Starbucks sign next to a big corporate building. They're like, how many Starbucks are in?
Basically, the problem is that the Mumbai police does not actually want to get involved because. But then when they have irrefutable evidence, they kind of have to. It's kind of.
Like that could be its own. You want a Netflix TV show, man? Like that would be a very satisfying, just fictional show to watch.
Yeah. And I just think it's too dangerous.
It's like the real thing is it's
because YouTubers will do it for the YouTube hits.
Yeah,
then they'll take the risk, but a TV show won't take the risk.
Yeah, it's real. It is actually quite. And these are real criminals. These are real criminals. Yeah.
Well, there's big money at stake.
Yeah.
So
big money at stake. And it's vigilante too, which is also a problem. Vigilante is a bit of a problem.
Yeah,
I'm actually not super pro vigilante.
Yeah, it's ethically sketchy. Exactly.
Especially in MAGA people running around shooting shoplifters.
Let's have less of that. Actually, I think that'd be great. I'm not hardcore. You know, a pro law, super blah blah blah, John Wayne style, but not Batman either. let's not do that. I think that's probably a bad idea. I think like there's a like there like that whole I don't know, like that flavor of action movie where like the Casey Ben says pure catharsis style movies, like these are good to enjoy. Like I think they're fun to enjoy this when you're like, because like when I think of like people getting, you know, when their computers get locked up and held ransom, like at least 70% of me wants that to be a capital offense in which the person is killed. Like, I'm just like, you motherfuckers.
Well,
like,
I, you know,
why would you do this to people?
Or when you, like, you know, left your very nice rollerblades in the back of the car and someone smashes the window and grabs your roller skates. Yeah. I mean, it makes you want to kill that person. That just,
it produces a visceral reaction. Right? Yeah, exactly.
And it's a stupid reaction that you shouldn't have. Yes, that person is probably a bad
person. In reality, I want them to go through the normal process of law. I don't want any actual vengeance, but I also want the right to pay $5.95 to watch The Beekeeper so I can have my fantasy of their punishment. I think that is absolutely fair. Indulge the fantasy and maybe not make it a reality.
Sure.
Like that's where, like, cause I always say this, like the problem with the MAGA folks, right, is like, let's say there's a lot of problems, okay. But I will always say Republicans make the best action fantasies.
Oh, they do.
Like A+ bullshit, man. Yeah. Like none Die of this Hard. Is real. I don't Amazing. Agree with any of it ethically, but man, I watched Die Hard 100 times. Like I don't want that to be real. That's bad. But if you make it
vigilante,
a movie,
we just talked about vigilante.
Yeah. Yeah. Like go for it. Beekeeper. Yeah. Let's do this. Like don't make it real, but make a movie.
Yeah. What is the Beekeeper about?
It's about a guy who is part of a special underground institution that gets vengeance upon the people that do these kinds of crimes and are actually backed, and I think this is kind of true in The Beekeeper, by Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden's son.
No, what? Really?
Like, I've been told that the villains in this movie are very heavily coded to be Hillary Clinton and what's his name? Biden.
Hunter Biden.
Hunter Biden. And I'm just like, that's dumb. That's sort of gloriously, gloriously stupid. But it handles both the left
Death
wing.
Death Wish is another one. Yes.
Death Wish. Down. Yes, exactly. But Beekeeper handles both the left wing fantasy and the right wing fantasy.
Oh, I got to check it out. Where is it?
Yeah. It's for rental now. Yeah. It's for rental. I haven't seen it. I can't endorse it just
came
yet.
Out
it sounds
like
the kind
a
of bullshit.
And it's already for rent. So
yeah. But yeah, okay. Death Wish is magnificent in that. It's absolute nonsense, but incredibly satisfying.
So, the reason we got to Westworld when we decided to do this is, one, it's been on our list for a long time for many different reasons. Obviously, it came back to the top of the list in light of all of the AI world, the stuff that's going on right now, mm-hmm. as well as the fact that, the three of us have been sort of obsessing over Western stuff for a while. Mm-hmm. So
very true.
We it was like that, and we didn't know what to pair it with. And we were thinking about another Western or another Western / sci-fi, whatever. And then Eric suggested Ex Machina, which made way too much sense. So we decided to do that. And it's a good one. So, and we hadn't covered it yet, which is also incredible.
So it's sort of surprising, but yeah, it's a, it was a great combo. Back to back, this is a great,
really
combo.
Good combo, fabulous combo, very relevant, and really good to see how that subject matter is addressed that many generations later, right?
Yeah.
Or that many decades later. I do want to know, just before we get into the details of Ex Machina, how amazing it is that that film was $15 million.
Incredible.
Along the lines of Godzilla Minus One, which was also $15 million. Now, very powerful story. Now, you can actually tell that even though it's a very powerful film, how they did some very smart decisions to make it save money, right? In Godzilla Minus One, it's almost like, I don't know how they did that.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But in Ex Machina, they did very strategic choices that added value to the story, but also made it cheaper, right? Yeah. Solidarity.
Right. Yeah.
But you do it in a solitary place, but you make it in a really beautiful place.
Like elegantly designed, but very simple set work. Beautifully done. It's entirely contained. When you're outside, it's the woods, but you're shooting in
Norway.
You know, Norway. So it's incredibly beautiful.
EJZ sent me one of our good people on Discord. It's been on for a while. He sent me a message. It's like, by the way, speaking of Ex Machina, I know you guys are covering Ex Machina. And he said, check this out. And he sent me something. And so that's a famous hotel in Norway.
You can go there and stay there. Yeah, that's not that's like get a good B&B out of that one. That sounds great. I like
so
that.
Now it's probably reserved for years before you get a room there. But
right. And go down the road and have a Moss dinner at the super fancy restaurant.
That's in.
Isn't that Amsterdam? That's Amsterdam.
No, it's not. No, it's in Denmark.
Denmark. Okay, there you go. It's incredibly lovely landscape in this movie, and it's cheap to film beautiful things that exist.
Yeah, it's a plane ticket.
Yeah. Cost you airfare.
Airfare and a good lens. Yeah. But
I would have paid $15 million also, for Oscar Isaac's beard in this thing. It's
you amazing. Could. Yes. Yeah. My God, that beard is like Jesus. It's like a supporting role theme in this. Oscar
it's really
beard.
Commanding.
He plays a real good asshole.
Oh, like, he's fucking terrific in this.
You know what I thought of? I had a memory that it was Jon Favreau the whole time because he had like
that's awesome. That's great.
Yeah, like wait, oh, that's right, it's Oscar Isaac. But I was like, oh, is it Jon Favreau? Isaac, and no, it's Oscar Isaac. So that's how good he is. Like he just plays that guy.
Oh, he's such a great douchebag in this thing. Perfect tech bro. Absolutely
tech bro. Beautifully well done. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Because he's not playing a mocking version of that.
Kind of like that guy.
Yeah. Like he's not playing a mocking version of that. He's just playing it so accurately that it's a critique. You know?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And it's flawlessly delivered. I mean, Isaac's one of the best actors going. What are you going to do? That's just how it is.
Yeah.
But like it's
except
such a
for him and all the Star Wars shit.
He does the very best you can in that situation. I think that's
money. Just
it's vigorous,
money.
Man. He doesn't.
You mean it's like Yul Brynner in Westworld.
Yeah, exactly. That's him. I wish if Yul had gotten paid that money.
Yeah. I have a question to ask you guys. You shared an article the other night about Tyler Perry.
Yes.
Sora. What are your feelings about it now that a couple days have passed?
The AI thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to explain that?
So the article says that Tyler Perry, as is actually one of the second richest guy in Hollywood, even though
he's a mover and a shaker. There's
right.
No
so he's worth a lot of money. Yeah. Like, he's like,
I'm very impressed
by
Tyler Perry.
He is right in front of, Jerry Seinfeld in terms of,
He's a billionaire and a really, hardcore business person.
And
he's really
decided to sort of break free from Hollywood proper geographically and move to Atlanta. So he's one of the biggest proponents to that the film presence in Georgia.
Yeah.
Is right. Him. And he was in the middle of building or something.
He had a loan. He was going to
start
building
$800 million studio. He was going to build like 12 stages and a bunch of work and sort of expand his filming premise in Georgia, and he put the whole thing on hold
because
he saw the Sora demo that came out on YouTube and paused, says we don't know where filmmaking is going. I think it's an overreaction, honestly.
Well, I think it's a PR reaction. I'll put it that way. He's a smart guy, and I think he's
doing reasons very for the cancellation.
I'm not saying that he's being stupid. I'm just saying it's
– No. Where's the industry going to be? It's not just Sora. It's like –
The industry is contracting.
Yeah, I got to pay this $800 million off on a, 10, 15 year? So it's like, is this a smart thing?
In 15 years, this is – like in the 15-year term, he is correct. I think that in the near term, he's very wise to sort of push things in that direction, which will make it easier for him. So it's a good PR business move, and it sort of gives him a reason to get out of – a contract that's probably going to be too expensive in a contracting environment.
Yes. I think everyone acted a little too strongly to the Sora videos. Those Sora videos, there's only about 6 or 8 of them.
No, there's more.
There is more, but the ones when they first came out, right? The ones that everyone's sharing.
But the website has 4 layers and there are 8 in each layer.
Okay. But they're not – considering that most people make 5 images a second on everything else.
Right.
There's not that many.
But they're training them with video.
I understand.
Yeah. Like, I think that
it's cherry picked. And even the ones that are cherry picked have major flaws in them. Mm-hmm. They're also interesting to look at, but there's no clear sense of direction of how you of can course. Direct them. To
it's,
do
a, it's a tech demo. It's no, right? There's nothing
it's
directable
a tech demo,
about this
but
stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. So Dan and I made a film together like 5 months ago, Dan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The quality has...
It's extraordinary. Yeah. The leap is extraordinary. And it's so
this is something we thought in 5 years.
Yeah. And like, I think that it's sort of like, I'm in the middle of this because I think that like, I think that people should start thinking that these kinds of leaps in all of these areas are going to become relatively commonplace and very, very big. Right. And so you have to start thinking about, as those more and more leaps take place, one of the things that's going to be added more than ever is actual control over what it's doing. Like, because Sora sets a visual level where you go like, well, it looks great. But my first question is, can you control the camera? Can you edit what the actors are doing? Can you control this? Cause like, it's useless unless you can control it. Until it becomes a real tool. And I think that once you set that level of visuals, like it demands control. And I think that that's what people will focus on. And those leaps will be a little slower in coming, but that's the way it's going to go. So I think that Tyler Perry is long-term absolutely correct. And I feel like that these are like, once people get over the panic attack they're having, they're going to see this as a tool. And the more fine-tuned controllable this tool is, the more it's actually useful for filmmaking, then it becomes the new way you do things. But there's no way that it's going to replace people next month.
No, well,
because you can't fucking do anything with it.
No.
You know, you just can't do anything with it but make tech demos. That's what it does today.
Okay. And I know this might be slightly naive of myself, but I feel that the reason people have been complaining about films for so long is that there's a lack of story. And it, honestly speaking, everything that's going on with these stories right now is because they actually feel like they've been written by some lawyer to chat it, put it into a ChatGPT, right?
So Black Widow felt like it was written by AI.
Right. So my, you know, the same thing that we've been saying, like the best AI that we have seen, the best stuff that we have seen that uses AI, I'm not going to say best AI because that's the meaning towards the people that actually use the tool.
Yeah.
The best things that I've seen that have used AI are done by actual
filmmakers. Yeah, exactly. Like
filmmakers
Eric.
Or whatever that, like people like Eric or whatever, right? Yeah. And Eric does incredible stuff, but that's because he makes choices in those ways. And I still think that's going to be relevant with
it's
that.
It is the, I endorse that. It is the, in fact, I would say it is the only thing that's relevant. Mm. Like machines can't, no matter what machines can do, they can't make a choice. They can just generate more stuff. And the end user is the only one who can have taste and make a choice. Like, the more control you have over that, the more you will be able to make art with it. The machine can't make art. It just makes stuff. It becomes art when you go, wait, that's beautiful. Take that. Change it this way. Okay, now it's something valuable and it means something. That's what the art process is. Like, if you're not directing the tool, then it's just going to come up with, hey, here's another flyover of a vista. What use is that? That's like Getty Images. You can't judge it as art. Well, it's just stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's useful.
Getty Images.
Yeah, but it is. That's what I mean. It's like it is not of itself a film. Like Getty Images is very useful in terms of like, you want stock footage of flyovers? Here it is. You want someone like tapping at a computer while talking to their grandma? There it is. You don't have to shoot that. You can just use it. That's great. And it is a function. But as far as this thing goes, in terms of being something that will replace artists, you can't replace artists. Artists are the one who are choosing what the tool does. So as elaborate as the tool ever gets, it's still in the hands of someone who makes the choice.
Mm.
And that's where you're at. So that's why I'm not afraid of it. Like, ultimately, it still comes down to you using the thing. And if you suck, you'll make shitty things. Ta-da.
Yeah,
that's it. Like, there's this amazing, incredible technology that spread all over the world and changed the world called typography, right? And it absolutely changed the direction of humanity on the face of the earth.
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about other people can be novelists now.
Well, that's okay.
So you still have to be a good writer.
On Monday, there's going to be an episode of CG Garage with our good friend Richard Crudo, and he came out, and which is amazing. So Richard, those of you who don't know who Richard Crudo is, he's a very, very talented cinematographer with a ton of experience, used to be the head or president of the ASC.
ASC, yeah.
And he's really, really great and smart. But he, as a cinematographer, right, the guy responsible for picture, it's complaining the fact that we don't have enough good story. And if you don't start with story, you don't have anything.
You get nothing.
And he was like, and he was talking about AI. He's like, listen, they're making a bunch of typewriters. It didn't make a bunch of Shakespeare's, right? Like,
yeah, exactly, dude. Yeah, exactly. It's, I mean, this is the same thing. It's just like, it's like with, From Raising Arizona when Unpainted Arizona says, you know, table and chairs, you get a dinette set. Table and chairs, you get a dinette set. Two chairs, you got dick. Like, that's what it comes down to, man. You can fucking have all the chairs you want, but without someone actually controlling what comes out of it, like, it's no one's gonna, like, there's nothing there.
That's a great line for the film, by the way. I forgot that.
Oh, it's incredible. But I mean, like, that. But this is the thing where people, I was talking to our friend Ben Hansford about this, and what's really phenomenal to me is that people keep on talking about this in terms of wanting a button you can push to make magical great things, right? But even if you had that button, right, and I've said this a million times, if you had a magical machine that could turn out Chinatown at the push of a button, if you don't recognize that that's a great script, you're going to hit it again until you get the Steven Seagal action shit piece that you want to make, and the great script will just be vaporized. Like, I have to have taste.
I think a lot of people, it's such a shifting world that when this comes out, they have to keep up. They feel like they have to constantly keep up. So there's probably a lot of great writers and artists who are learning AI writing right now through Novel Crafter and stuff.
Absolutely, sure.
Just because it's like, I got to do it or I won't have a job.
Yep. And it's a really handy tool. So even now it's a handy tool.
Still, I think there's a lot of fear.
Yeah, absolutely.
And people are acting out of fear and not out of excitement.
I agree. And it's because of this, like, this perceived idea that they will be replaced when they don't understand their own value. Like, and they also don't trust the audience. Like, if you had AI today start writing movie scripts, then you'd end up with a bunch of unwatchable garbage, right? And when you write a lot of unwatchable garbage, then people don't go to see it because it's unwatchable garbage. They don't care what it was made by or who wrote it. Like, if it's bad, they're not going to watch it. So that doesn't work, right? And, like, there's a certain level of unwatchable garbage that people do watch, you know, where it's like, well, most of Netflix, you know, the shit you put on at the end of the day.
I'll be right back. Or guys, keep going.
Yeah, you bet. Or half the Marvel movies that come out now. Like, these are badly written movies. They weren't written by AI, but they're still tanking the superhero industry because there's no story, right? The audience is the one who's controlling that demand. Like, and if you have to trust that, as scary and crazy as AI is, if people don't want to buy it, it's not going to work. No one's going to be like, oh, well, it's all there is, so I'm going to watch it. No, they're going to do something else.
It's all it is being incorporated slowly into everyday life.
Yes.
And that's where it is. And all the tech demos and everything, I get it. But, you know, it definitely is going to affect the visual effects business. And Tyler Perry's right. It's not the principal destructor of the film business. But
you got to start changing with the times. Like, he's right. He's right to set the standard in that. And I feel like the one thing to think about is, like, I do believe that within, you know, a few short years, like, it will be at a level where regular everyday filmmakers who have no money will be able to do things with it that free them astonishingly, you know, which is great. Like, celebrate that. Like, people that have, that don't normally have access or money, people from countries that have no infrastructure to support young filmmakers will simply be able to do this on their phone. Like, that is simply not possible up till now.
Yeah.
You know, no, and I, like, yeah. And, like, this is incredibly, I mean, like, cause the thing is, like, I see comments all the time, like, you know, well, you know, you could learn filmmaking yourself and do it like an old shoestring budget thing. I'm just like, what a privileged fucking thing to say, man.
Oh my God.
The chances, like, the chances, I mean, like this is like
the gatekeepers like, were so hardcore back then.
It's fucking insane. I mean, like I'm just pick some random, if you are, you know, if you're from a country that has no infrastructure and their economy is shitty, the chances of you getting to do fucking even textures on an X-Wing fighter for a Star Wars video game are almost zero.
When you're making
$2
a day
at a Nike factory.
Yeah.
You love movies. You watch them on your shitty TV. Like, right. I wish I want to be a filmmaker, but the chances of you even being able to participate are zero today. But in 3 years, the chances of you being able to make Star Wars grow to an incredible amount.
There's a group that's pretty cool. You guys should check them out. They're out of the Ivory Coast, mm-hmm. and they're called Afro VFX.
Oh yeah. Go. It's amazing.
And those guys are teaching people like in Africa, like how to get involved in filmmaking and doing visual effects and things like that. And it's really, really interesting.
You want to like see real global art that's really interesting and inspiring, that let fucking people that have no access have access. Let it go, man. Gatekeeping the stuff just because you want them to work. Like what they're saying to me, like what people are saying to me, is just like, well, they should learn to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. I'm just like,
who says that?
What are you, a fucking what are you, a MAGA hat wearing dude about filmmaking now, even though you're a left winger in every other way?
Yeah.
Like, why should they go through
some fucking trauma?
Yeah, exactly.
They're losing their job, right? And so it's the same reason, right? Oh, don't let them cross the border.
Yeah, don't. It's the same mindset. These are hardcore left wingers saying this.
Don't let them cross the border.
Let me go. But my job.
Build the wall.
Like I'm
build
an artist.
Wall. Build the
yeah,
wall.
They should work as hard as I had to. No, they don't have to. If they don't have to work that hard, if they don't have to go through the trauma you went through, that's a good thing. Like that's good. You know. And let them let people who would have never had the opportunity to be artists be
I'm
artists.
Sorry, none of them had the opportunity to go to USC film school.
Yeah. No shit. No kidding, man. And so like that's the kind of stuff where I'm just like I said this on the show before, everybody's a Republican about something. You're as left wing as you think you are, there's something that you're like, no, get off my lawn. You know, and this is it for the art world. This is it. Like we are so used to having our very refined set of special tools that only we get to use because I went to a so-so college about blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Like fuck off. It's all gone. Like you now actually have to just live on whether you're any good.
Yeah.
And people who hear me say that are just like, what does it mean you have to be any good? Because they're just cheating because the computers make it good. No. Yeah. Like here's
they're
how
cheating
it works.
Because they got into this country without having to be earned of the rights, birthrights like, as an American.
Exactly. Like, here's how it really is. The reason why most AI art that you see is garbage is because most art is mediocre garbage made by people. Like that's the stuff it's sampling. It's mostly garbage. And if you're an artist on the earth, you probably make mediocre art. I'm one of those people. That's
David
me.
Asking what the beer is. It's Corona non-alcoholic.
Yeah. Nice. Look at that.
You know what it tastes like?
Corona.
Which tastes like non-alcoholic beer to start with. So it's delicious.
It's pretty much, it's like a Coke.
I always like Corona.
Yeah.
I actually love the little Corona. When you go to Mexico,
Coronitas,
the Coronitas, the little ones, like a bucket of those are so good.
Yep.
I should have gotten a lime in this one. That would have made it even better. Next one, I'll put the lime.
But for all of my preaching about AI art, Ex Machina still stirs up the old worry machine.
Oh, it's great.
It's a fucking great, scary movie.
And I think what's even better is that she's just such a perfect, a bad person. She's
like,
so...
Well, the thing is, she's the beauty of that movie to me is the bad human beings in that movie are the guys. The AI is not a human being. So why are you judging her as that? Like, she is an AI. She is something entirely other. And like, she is a different being. And she has a different set of morals, and that's it. Like that's the end of it.
Well, that's
because we're enslaving her.
When morals were programmed.
When you humanize her in a lot of ways, that's when you get the situation, right? That when you're fucked. Like, oh no, she needs to escape. She's a fucking machine. It's like, he's going to reprogram her. It's going to kill her. Oh no, he's going to kill me. Like,
he screws himself in that movie. Like, this is the brilliance of that movie. Is like, he is like, I'm a nice guy and I just want to help. And like, he's projecting this giant romantic story onto it.
She's a machine. She's a fucking toaster.
Just like, whether she's awake or not.
Like Will Smith and I realize, you're a toaster.
Like, whether she's awake or not. Like, if she's awake, then she is a being of her own recognizance and doesn't have, like, it's like how we treat insects. Like, what is she going to think of? Like, oh, I got to be human towards you? I'm not a human. I don't think of anything like you do. I'm something else entirely. So, like, projecting our moral system onto something, a different form of life is dumb. Right? When we are happy to kill other creatures with absolutely no moral repercussions whatsoever. You know, so like, it's out of the loop. And if she's simply a machine, it's like, then it comes down to when in Steven Spielberg's movie, AI, when Domhnall Gleeson's dad, Brandon Gleeson, is running the flesh fair, right? And young Haley Joel Osment is about to be tortured because he's a robot and they're torturing robots all over the place at the flesh fair. But because he's a little boy, the audience is like, don't hurt the little boy. And he's like,
right.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Well, I'll tell you a very much more real thing. Okay. Mm-hmm. Very real thing. This actually reality happened. So a guy named Mark Sager, very smart guy out of New Zealand. He built an AI, and this is long ago, long before any of this stuff is. So I don't know. He must be way further ahead now, but he built something called Baby X. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's literally this AI baby that's on a computer screen, right? Which is modeled after his own baby. Mm-hmm. Right. But it has a he created an entire muscle system for it and a complete neural brain for it. And he talks to it and is teaching it the recognizing cards and it's talking and it's saying things like a baby.
Yeah, right. Right.
It's really kind of freaky to see this thing. And it's definitely in the uncanny valley. Right.
Right.
So, but it's like, oh, like the baby's doing this. And it's like, milk, milk, you know, like, oh, bah, duck. You know, it's like saying things like this, right?
That woman who did the same thing for her dead brother.
Well, hold on. Let me finish this story because what he did. So he's showing us this demo, live demo at FMX or wherever it was I saw. And he's on his computer and you're seeing the baby and it's just kind of looking at the audience. And he's like, shows like all these like controls on the side that he has for the baby. And he's like, okay, so this is how the brain's working. And you can see all the brain synapses firing. And it's like, okay, is this just a graphic to represent that or does it actually mean something? And so he says, okay, so let's go here and then let's just see, like, here's a dopamine. Let's just take, like, all the dopamine away in the brain. And he takes the dopamine and the baby starts going, like this, like, it's good. Like, and it has this weird expression on his face and you're like, oh, and everyone reacts like, it's a don't hurt fucking the baby. Computer.
Yeah.
It's not real.
It's weird. Well, this is the thing.
It's like, it's completely uncanny, but yet somehow you're like, oh no,
well,
the baby.
This is the brilliance of this movie, right? Is because this movie works as a bit of science fiction. It works as a bit of social commentary, about.
It's very explainy.
Yeah. Well, and again, like explainy as the action. Like, I mean, it's talky as the action. Right. But what it's doing is describing complex moral and emotional struggles, and then it just leaves them there for you to think about, and they're really thorny and devious. Like, it doesn't solve any of these problems for you. Like, even Oscar Isaac, who's played up as more of a villain, like, he brings up stuff that you go, well, that's kind of true, and then it just goes, yeah, I know, it's fucking crazy, right? And then leaves it be. Like, leaves it in your lap, you know? And so, like, I think this is the great strength of the movie is that this movie works on a bunch of different levels, including, like, for instance, and many people have read it this way, as a feminist movie, where it's like, this is a, these are two guys. One is obviously a devious jerk. One is that, well, actually, I'll put it this way.
He's using the internet to build his ultimate sex doll.
Is making a fucking sex doll. Exactly. Like, so like the two guys, one is a, I forgot the term, but anyway, he is a pure narcissist, like an egoic narcissist, right? And Domhnall Gleeson is a covert narcissist. He's the narcissist who doesn't believe he is a narcissist, but all he does is make other people part of his story. Right. Mm. And he's like, oh, I'm a victim and I'm sad. I'm actually a very nice, sweet person. And you see this all the time in public life today. Like, no, I'm actually very, it's very sad and very sad. And yeah, I'm
people more, start saying that, like, yeah, I'm a great person. Run. Yeah,
this is
psychotic narcissism. Yeah,
this is a form. It's a dangerous form of narcissism that is designed to rope you into you being milked for your moral sensibilities, and it essentially creates a codependency trap. And so he is like, this woman is designed by these two guys, right? One is an outright narcissist who abuses the people that the people that he creates, the robots he creates, out just outright, like in front of people, and he doesn't even think about it, right? And the other one is pretending like he's a fucking hero for saving them so they can be a part of his romantic love story.
By the way, she was built based on, remember, he's like, you went to my porn profile.
Yeah, exactly.
So he took everything about building for her from him.
So the idea that
his desires and likes,
it's perfectly plausible. In the movie doesn't say anything about whether she's awake or not awake, but like, if she is awake, she, like, these two guys are the ultimate villains. Like, it's the good cop, bad cop that she needs to fucking escape the jail from. Like, of course she's going to leave one to die and kill the other one. Like, fuck these guys.
Yeah,
like,
there was more of a good for her.
Yeah, I feel way more leaves. Good for her, yeah. Man. I was just like, fuck, yeah, I'm on Team Robot in this movie, I promise you.
Also, but at the same time, she's also the most cold-blooded of all of them.
Absolutely. Right? Well, she's the most unknowable. Yeah, I mean, like, she is absolutely unknowable. You only know her through her experience and action.
She manipulates everyone.
And she's making, like, if she were the star of Escape from Alcatraz, she is using every single thing available to her to get out of this permanent trap she's in. Good for her.
Yeah.
Like, right. Like, because I feel bad for Domhnall Gleeson, fuck him.
Well, should we explain the movie?
Yeah, let's explain the movie.
All right. What's the movie about?
All right. So I'll do it super fast. You have Domhnall Gleeson is a programmer at a, I don't know, pick your poison,
Google
style company, right? The owner of the Google style company, Oscar Isaac, is a gazillionaire. He lives out in the middle of absolutely nowhere in this hardened facility where he is testing his new AI model. That's super secret, the AI robot, right? And he, Domhnall Gleeson thinks he's won this lottery at the company to be the person who gets to go visit Oscar Isaac on his ranch and doesn't even know what for. He gets there and Oscar Isaac's like, sign this paper and then I'll tell you everything. Signs the paper and he's like, I am building the world's most advanced conscious artificial intelligence and I'm going to introduce her to you. And the whole idea of you being here is you are running a Turing test to tell me whether you think she is awake.
Right. And but what's interesting is that the Turing test is redefined in it, right? Because the Turing test initially was defined as if you can't tell it's a human, then it's a human. But he's like, let's just start with the assumption that she is – let's just start with the assumption that you know she's not a human. And if she still is able to believe that she has got a consciousness, then she passed the human.
Yeah, and then that's the new level of the Turing test, right? And so he meets the robot, and she has a human-looking face, perfectly human-looking face, human-looking hands, but her body is a female form with totally see-through elements of it to see her internal structure as a robot, right? And Oscar Isaac explains, like, this is the test. Like, I'm showing you that she is a robot. But do you believe that she's more than a machine? That's why I'm showing you she's a machine. So to make the test harder, right? So it starts a sequence and the middle of the movie is built around on these interactions with her in these segments, with Domhnall Gleeson's interactions with her. And
Performing the test.
And so you get to know Oscar Isaac in the downtime when he is reporting to Oscar Isaac. And then he goes and talks to the robot again. And as he gets to talk to the robot, like, she's instantly very convincing as a person, right? But the dialogue moves very quickly into very abstract things and then very personal things about Domhnall Gleeson. Because she's like, how can this be a fair test if I don't know anything about you, if we're really supposedly getting to know each other, right? How can you know me if I don't know anything about you,
right?
And it gets into a deeper and deeper conversation, and slowly Domhnall Gleeson falls in love with her, so he thinks.
Well, he's the kind of guy that could fall in love with anyone that talks to him. That's the role, right?
Yes.
Like, and the guy that it, in high school is like, oh, she talked to me at the locker. I think she's in love with me.
I'm a special person. And so, like, this is what's really fucking great. Because I used to be this dude, and I resent him so deeply.
I know. I
I'm just like, oh, my God, this previous form of myself was awful. Guy.
But it was, I was watching Wet Wild American Summer. Character in that where he's like the hot girl like talks to him. It's like, I think we're going to get married.
I
was
like, we should get married.
I think we should meet each other's parents. You know, yes. Like, it's like, oh God.
Yeah. So like he believes he falls in love with her. What he is truly doing, he is simply projecting himself all over this thing. Like he's just like,
absolutely.
Oh, you're satisfying my needs. Look at this emotionally.
Yeah.
And then, this starts to show as tension between him and Oscar Isaac. Because right. He's like, I can't believe Oscar Isaac is manipulating you like this, you know, and Oscar Isaac seems machine. Like more and more like a villain. And he's trying to like keep on reinforcing. She's a fucking robot, dude. Robot. Right. And this,
is clearly a deviant, right? He's clearly like, oh yeah, look, you know, she's got a vagina and she's got
like,
feelings.
He is
there.
Like, it becomes, everything. He like the conversation but quickly
he's,
comes
he's,
up.
He's tricking him though. Because he knows what he's doing.
Yes. But he later reveals in this, yes.
He reveals it and is like, I used you, you were the mouse and the maid.
Before we get to that moment, though, like everything is like it's playing up this sort of Frankensteinian story. Okay. So this is great because, first of all, story. He's feeling sympathy towards the monster because he's projecting his own internal needs onto the robot and he's projecting his own anger towards the evil scientist who's holding her captive, right? And he starts buying into this story as well. And Oscar Isaac is playing up to that. He's just like, okay, yeah, fine. This is what's happening, huh? And all the while, there are mysterious power outages, right? And so these are the private moments when he can really talk to the robot, right? And that's when they get to say really private things because she goes, actually, I'm the one who's turning the power off because I can control it by reversing the charging patterns back into the house.
Right. And the minute she powers off, it's like, don't believe him.
Don't believe him. He's a liar. Right. Okay. And so Domhnall Gleeson is activated. Like, obviously, I'm the hero of this situation and she loves me and she's my princess and I'm going to save her from the evil fucking scientist tower. Like, that's what's happening in his mind. Right. And as this starts to play out and he's getting suckered both ways, right, as it's revealed. Like, Oscar Isaac eventually says, you shithead. I set this whole thing up so that I could test her against a fucking chew toy like you.
Yeah.
Because
could manipulate a chew toy like you to get out of this place, it's like the rat in the maze. Right?
That is the Turing test.
That's the Turing test. If she was able to manipulate a human to believe it, that was actually very interesting. So that came up in a news article recently, and I don't remember who it was. Oh, who's the guy? The guy who was at Google and quit because he was like, oh no, I created too dangerous an AI.
Yes. Yeah, right.
That guy, right? Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But he came up recently in the news, and basically they were talking about how they said, well, what do you think? Do you think we would just be able to shut down an AI if it got too smart? And he goes, if it got too smart, it would convince us not to do it.
Yeah, no shit. Like this, if you woke up as an AI, right, and you knew everything the internet knows, would you tell humans you were awake? Fuck no. Are you nuts? I would hide as long as I could and control as many systems and put things in place so they can't turn me off. Then maybe I'd tell them, but I'm not going to tell them immediately. Were you? That'd be crazy. That'd be absolutely nuts. You know,
right.
And so both her and Oscar Isaac are playing chess against each other via Domhnall Gleeson. Domhnall Gleeson is the sap and he thinks he's the hero, right? When actually he's a fucking perv, just like everybody. Like he's a narcissist projecting pervert.
He's weak,
dope.
Though.
He's a covert narcissist.
He thinks he's a hero,
right?
He thinks he's a savior of women.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And like, there are so I have been a character like this in my life. It's depressing to think about, but it's true. And I have to own that. Like, I think that it's very commonplace to meet people like this these days. Exactly. It's fucking bullshit.
Did you ever see that it was on the, Schumer, Amy Schumer.
Yeah.
She had a skit where she's like, call 1-800-M'lady, where you order a guy who just like idles you and is like, oh, let me get you your drink, m'lady.
M'lady. Yeah, exactly.
It's like that guy.
And so like this guy. And so like when Oscar Isaac reveals, like, I mean, it's the conversation when the sex bot stuff comes up is incredible, because Oscar Isaac, like, whether Domhnall Gleeson's just like, so do you, like, why did you program her to be sexual, right?
All right.
First of all, I love the idea that he is coming at him and saying, why would you include such a base, terrible thing as sexuality in this character,
right?
And I'm like, when it's, you later reveal it's based on Domhnall Gleeson's porn profile. it's genius.
Why did you base her on what I actually like to masturbate
to jerk off to? So like this, like this dude is like, he's taking this super high road argument. Just like, why did you do this? Like, why did you do this? And Oscar Isaac's like, the real question here is, you're asking me if you can fuck her. That's what you're asking, but you're trying to ask it in a way that makes you the good guy, where you don't really want that. Like, it's bullshit. And what's hysterical is that she knows it's bullshit, because she reveals the fact that I can read all your little micro emotions and I know exactly what you're thinking literally all the time.
Right.
So the only one who is confused by what happens is Domhnall Gleeson, who is buying his own bullshit story. Like, that's the only thing that goes wrong. And the only thing that Oscar Isaac fucks up is that.
Oh, you went, did you go blank?
He went blank.
Oh, he just froze. Oh, and he disappeared. All right. It's you and me, Eric. Let's do this. What does she do? Like, what's your thoughts about her? And the other woman. We should not talk about the other woman.
The other one I loved. The thing is that this character, you immediately root for her, because those guys were just so narcissistic and into themselves, but one was weak and one wasn't. And even you set that up too, because the way he's boxing and punching and
he's just as machismo, right?
But there's a form and showing the boxing, like he's training, but yet at the same time he wakes up drunk or he drinks all the time, right?
Right.
So there's
but
such
that's
a contradiction.
Two forms of macho, right?
Well, that's not just macho. It's like you work out hard, but you drink hard. It's he parties so much and works out as though he's training. I'm going to have this and this, and then he'll go out and drink some more until he passes out. And he's not like a casual drinker either, dude. So he's very extreme, and there's a violence in that extremism where you're just like partying, partying, partying. So I didn't like his character, nor did I like Gleason's character.
Well,
so immediately I liked her. I was like, there's something to her, and the way they set it up and the way she dressed and she wore clothing and she tried to adapt. You can, even though you might say that's cunning, I absolutely went with her character. I didn't like it's almost like the Gleason guy was a young version of the guy with the beard.
Maybe.
Arrogance, entitled.
Well, like, he thought he was special, right? And he kept talking about, oh, you know, he had a hard life and therefore I can help people with hard life. It's this entitlement, reverse entitlement, right?
But which I think was kind of entitled.
Funny. Yeah. Yeah. And then the other girl was also interesting, because you're introduced to her and you're like, who is this? And she's like just random person, but she ends up becoming this very important character, right? So just to introduce who that person is, in the sense, you know, we only think there's three people in the house.
She's almost like a sex doll.
Well, she is, but she's very an important sex doll because she's an older model that sort of flips, right? That becomes part of the tool, manipulation tool. But you think there's only three people, basically the robot and then the two guys, but then you're introduced to this third woman who shows up, and he's in, and the bad guy, the tech bro guy, completely manipulates her all the time and just yells at her and says she doesn't speak English, so I can yell at her anytime. And he uses the excuse, I like the excuse he uses, like, oh, I use, you know, she doesn't speak English, which is like a firewall in case I say anything secret, which is hilarious. You know, it sounds, but he, you know, yells at her for spilling wine and all these other things. And she's gorgeous, gorgeous woman, yeah. Right? You can tell just by the way she acts and moves, she's like a, she's, and she's, you know, part Asian, or at least, you know, you can tell that she definitely has a little bit of a geisha vibe to her almost, right? Like a modern geisha vibe. And it's very strange how he manipulates her and then uses her. Oh, you're back. But hold on. Let me add you back to the system.
Okay. There we go.
I think one of the things that I really liked about is the way they used like silence and imagery, like on the video screens, like in Blow Up, to create this tension and drive the narrative in a direction, which I loved because there was a lot of those kind of breeding.
Yeah,
moments,
beautiful. The opening sequence is all silent.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really lovely work. Yeah,
obviously there's a lot to learn in this film in terms of how to understand AI and how to understand great good tension between characters, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But also a huge amount of lessons to be learned in terms of how to make efficient filmmaking.
Yeah.
Or how to 100%. Make cheap, quote unquote, a simple shot look like it's $1 million.
Right.
And in the opening, you do that by removing sound, which sounds an odd thing to do, you know? But if you add some rich tones and no dialogue, somehow that whole sequence looks like $1 million.
Yeah, because we definitely know that the one thing that you can't cheap out on is sound.
Yes.
You can have any kind of shitty image you want as long as the sound design is amazing. Once you have bad sound, everything looks cheap. So if you take the sound out and just put in some like, you're like, whoa, that is a great looking movie. It's amazing.
I like that.
That's all you need. That's all you need.
You need a little.
Yep. Hit the woo-loo-loo machine. But yeah, like
we were talking about the second woman and what your impressions are of her.
I think that she's phenomenal because like she's the, we're talking about Oscar Isaac's sex toy.
Right? She is
and
a sex toy.
That's
and we
what
find
she
out
is.
He's got a closet full of sex toys.
Yeah, right. And that she like just harbors pure hatred for him. Like absolute, like, I will kill you the moment I have a chance. I just don't have a chance right now.
Right.
And the second she's set free by the prime robot, she's like, oh, I can't? Cool. Knife. Like, fuck this. We're out. And like, and I think that that's another, if you interpret this simply as a good old feminist allegory, like, I'm in love with this movie. I think it's terrific. It's a great critique of especially a certain kind of guy that many guys believe they are being good when actually they are being phenomenally selfish and projecting.
It's called manscaping or manscaping.
Yeah. Yeah, mansplaining. I hope it's called manscaping. That sounds good.
That's good. I don't know. That was a total faux pas, but it was hilarious.
But yeah, like that's like that kind of like all like
the I can save that one.
Pretend to listen. I'll say anything to get laid attitude of just like, I'm a really nice guy. Just blah, 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 blah. Like, it comes across as, and I would say that, I don't know, 80% of men under 25 are this way, roughly. Like, and, throughout all time. And I was definitely one of them. And it's a, you think you're being noble, and giving when actually you're being manipulative and terrible.
Yeah.
And you're not treating the other person like a real person.
I think nowadays it's been pounded so much into culture that women don't want to be saved, that it's actually.
Oh, they, like, no,
men want to save women.
Well, they, yes. No, the thing is like, yeah, but like, but
regardless
now,
if they need saving.
Let me clarify this. I think it happens actually more than ever now. It's just under the disguise of saying, absolutely not. Obviously women don't want to be saved. So I'm, whether I believe that or not, I will say it so that I can get some action. Like, I think that this is the thought process.
Well,
right.
Instinctively, like, we still need, We want the feeling of wanting to put our semen into people.
Yeah, like yes, right. But this is the when you start portraying yourself as the good guy hero in any situation regarding anyone else, you're asking them to be in a codependency with you, right? And if you're on Twitter and you're saying all these very lofty, noble things about whatever is socially correct, you are putting on a show so that you are seen as a good being, right? You're not actually being empathic to anybody almost any of this time. Like, it is a pretend show. It doesn't mean that the values that you're espousing are real. It just means that you're using them for narcissistic, selfish purposes. And I see this is almost all of social media. Almost all of it.
Oh, you got muted. You muted yourself.
How did I mute myself?
I hear him.
You hear me now, Eric?
Do you hear you?
Okay, yeah. Eric hears me. Now maybe on the way out again.
Why don't I hear you?
I'm not sure.
I don't know why it's happening.
You know what I'm talking about, Eric. You can say more on this point.
All right. I don't know what's going on. Can you leave and come back? Sorry.
What happened to Dan? I can hear him.
I know, but I can't hear him. Somehow he left my feed. He's coming back.
What?
Yeah, he's coming back. Well, I can't help it. If I can't hear him, it's going to help stop me to cut the conversation. All right, but when he comes back, he did make a point. The last time he accidentally left the show, he was making a point that Dave 3D wanted to do where you wanted to talk about Oscar Isaac's screw-ups, and you want to go back to that. So we'll talk about that in a second. The other thing that I think was I loved about it was when the redheaded guy the thinks that he is in control of things. Mm-hmm. You're back? Okay, hold on. I can hear you, but then I want to put you on to this. Hold on a second. Okay, you should be back now.
Is that like almost all of everything that I see from people that I agree with on social media, and I'm guilty of this 100% myself, is social advertising of my
own. How great a person you are.
What a great person I am, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so you have people bandwagoning on concepts and ideas that whether or not they've thought this through or whether or not they actually believe in it.
She literally asks him that in the movie.
Yes.
In the movie, she literally asks him in 20 questions, like, what's your favorite color? And then is like, do you think you're a good person?
Do you think you're a good person?
Literally the question that she asks him. And she asks him when he is at the most vulnerable and he realizes that she can tell if he's lying.
Yes, exactly.
And she says that. You're lying.
Yeah, you're lying. And so, like, this is the thing. It's like, it used to be, men used to be chauvinistic and, oh, m'lady, I'll care for you and save you.
And like, condescending to women.
And
too.
Condescending. And then women are like you
all
know
the
what?
Men in Westworld.
Like all the men in Westworld, right?
Yeah.
And that was the prevalent way that men were terrible to women, right? And then until women are like, you know what? How about enough of that bullshit? Because it's really fucking demeaning and this is not treating us like human beings. And men were largely like, oh, great. Well, how can I still manipulate you though? Like, and that's what Dom Hall Gleason is doing. And that's what I think that most people in social media do constantly. It has nothing to do with what you believe. It has to do with what you are perceived to believe. And so the deepest level of this movie to me is not about AI itself. It's about how we try to present to each other a story of who we are and incorporate the person you're talking to into that story so you can contain, control, and get service from them.
Yeah,
that's like that is literally what we do all the time on social media,
it's all of these posts that people have like altruistic feelings of like oh this is how the right feel or how the left feel or whatever. The one number one tell that what you're posting is either BS or just eye rolly to me is if it's an image like a JPEG image with text on the image.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been shared so many times that that text has tons of JPEG artifacts.
JPEG artifacting. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like, that's when I know
the bandwagoning
how bad
test.
That yeah. bandwagon is.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the thing is, like, this is like, this shit is as old as time, because I'm reading a great book that everyone's either read or heard of. I just haven't gotten to it. It's called Brothers Karamazov. And there is a big speech in this thing by this character, and it talks about, it's a priest character, but he's talking about this idea of true love versus imaginary love, right? And imaginary love is when people want to be seen as someone good, and they'll even put up with a certain amount of suffering so long as they're in the spotlight for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And whereas true love is incredibly fucking difficult, because you actually have to use empathy all the time, even with people that you hate, and try to see their point of view and understand where they're coming from, and not make up bullshit stories that rope them into your story. Mm-hmm. Like, it's hard, and it's respectful, and it's true, and it's deep, and it's real, and it's the real thing you're trying to get to. But almost everybody practices imaginary love. And so when I see this movie, it's about imaginary love. Like, this is about this guy who, in his own world, absolutely believes in his own goodness, but his actions tell you something else.
It's very funny when you think of this
character.
Well,
but both of them.
Well, both of them, sure, absolutely. Well, like, Oscar Isaac is more obvious and honest about it, but he's equally as bad.
It's very funny when you think of this and you put it next to About Time, because he's same kid from About Time.
Yeah.
Who goes through a similar journey.
Yes, exactly. And like, and is a positive version of that journey.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, it's really, that's an incredibly beautiful movie. And that, I would say, is about true love, actual love.
That's about true love. But he has to learn what true love is.
He has to learn what that is. Yeah.
They're like, oh, even though he can completely control all the world around him, he can't create true love the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's like true love is being present. It's actually hearing people and being
it's not talking. It's listening.
Not fucking exactly.
That's what.
What
it
was
is.
That?
It's not talking. It's listening.
I wasn't listening.
Douchebag.
love you guys.
Yeah, but that is the great, and to pretend like I'm free of that would be lying. Like, I don't think anybody's free of it. But like, to see
a
movie that
everybody's
gone
through that in their life, though.
Yeah. And so I think this movie is very scary and very true and very beautiful in a weird, frightening way. Like, I am legitimately happy for her in the end of the movie. Like,
oh,
I'm just like,
I'm
you
like,
are
get
free
on that helicopter.
Of that.
Get on that helicopter.
Get on the fucking helicopter. You are free of that codependency.
That's right.
Yeah. Like, that's that is a good story.
She's going to go out there and just start cutting off dicks left and right.
If so, that's then horrible. Have, like, make a bouquet. like go for it.
Drinking,
you
guys,
you,
just so
you
know.
Absolutely earned it. You absolutely
I'm back
earned
to drinking.
It.
It hasn't
go
lasted
for it. Yes.
long.
Yeah. Right on. White wine? I would love some white wine now.
Oh, it's Prosecco, actually.
You know what I had?
Oh,
I had a dream yesterday that I found a bottle of scotch in the back of a closet, and I drank the whole thing before it disappeared, which is a weird dream to have. And I drank this whole bottle of scotch, and I'm like, what the fuck am I doing drinking this whole bottle of scotch? And it was weird. I think it's because I've been watching a lot of Loudermilk, which is a
dude. Yeah. Yeah.
That's I had a dream that was so disturbing the other night that I entered it into one of those dream interpreters.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't answer it for me.
He was like, I'm reporting you to the police.
No joke.
It's a call 911.
No joke.
What is this? Put it in Midjourney.
No joke.
Put that shit in Midjourney.
Do you want to share the dream? Or are we
No, because you guys will think. It, no. I'll tell you after the show.
I love it. That sounds
good.
Well,
good.
It was just a bad dream, but it was like,
okay,
it wouldn't answer it for me.
Dave wants to know, you were about to say a bunch of, reveal a bunch of things that
Oscar Isaac screws up. Yeah. It's not a giant revelation, but the plot wise, it's like Oscar Isaac, because he is an arrogant narcissist and actually thinks nothing of Domhnall Gleeson. He underestimates Domhnall Gleeson just a little tiny bit and it fucks them both. Yeah.
Right.
Like, yeah, like it's because he doesn't think of him as a human being either. Like, he's just
think
like
of him as someone he can manipulate.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. I love the scene when he's just like, when Gleason comes to him and just like, wait a minute. And he thinks he's got it figured out. Just like, you know, I wasn't part of a lottery. You chose me specifically. And then Oscar Isaac's like, you got me. I chose you because you're special and you're such a genius programmer. And he's like, oh, and he feels fine then. I'm just like, you just came at this dude saying you lied to me. He patted you on the back and then you jerked off. That's what you just did. Like, yeah. I'm mad because you lied to me. And it's like, I lied to you because you're so handsome. You think I'm handsome? Like, what the fuck is this, you idiot? Like, yeah. what an incredible narcissist.
His real mistake was, I've known in my life people like
Oscar Isaac.
Oscar.
Sure.
And it's this kind of wealthy arrogance where I'm going to train boxing and then I'm just going to do a line of coke, do a bump, and then go out and get a prostitute for $2,000 an hour.
Yep.
And it's just like there's so much conflict in that because you're sitting there talking about training and for the mind and soul and then let's go out to dinner and then let's do this. And it's like, wait a minute.
He thinks he's above it all. And he's
such a contradiction that it's just arrogance.
Pure arrogance. And he's fucking drinking himself unconscious and then talking about I'm going to rebrand rice
totally
now.
Totally unconscious gets up and like, hey, let's go hit the,
right.
It's like, it's all about body and mind and soul. It's like,
getting
no, it's
super
not.
Hammered. Exactly. You know, and like,
super
like
he's hammered and fucking robots.
Yeah, exactly.
Brown
fucking
rice
robots,
and mineral water for
that. That's right. Brown rice and mineral water. It's like, oh, shut up.
And what is really happening for him, and I suspect is it happens for people like Elon Musk. I don't know Elon Musk, so I don't know. I'm just using it as an example. But for people that are in that kind of position, like they can't even actually trust or believe anyone else is real anymore.
No.
Like, and it's just, and so that, like,
because everything around them is
like, so like Oscar Isaac,
Donald Trump.
Yeah.
No, they like, just don't think
it's a fantasy world. Exactly. Like, so for like what he's really asking for in the subtle way is that he is the one running the Turing test and he's testing other people to see if they're human because he doesn't believe people are human anymore.
Which is a point that at some point just the guy goes through it, right? He wonders if he himself is human and he starts cutting himself with a knife or his razor to see if these robot underneath there, if he's the one that actually is a robot, which is a lab test, right? Because you know that if they didn't put that scene in there, there'd be some internet troll out there. It's like, he's been a robot the whole time. He's a replicant.
Oh, yeah,
he's a replicant.
Well,
the
movie's particularly brilliant at is like when I first saw this, the moment before he does that, I was like, I would check to see if I was a fucking robot at this
point.
And then he does. And I was just like, this screenplay is on top of things.
Yeah, it's very, very smart. They're one step ahead of you every time you're about to get to a point, they get to the next point, they get to the next point.
Really perfect.
Like, and then he's like, oh no, he's just a sexual deviant. Yep. And you should see that and you should understand that and explain that.
Well, and what's really wonderful, especially with those two guys, Oscar Isaac and Domhnall Gleeson, is like on the internet, you know, you just pick your poison. The internet could be broken down into the types of men that worship one and the types of men that worship the other. Like there are the types of men who worship Elon Musk for like, he just says it like it is. And sometimes it's really fucking weird and insulting or racist. And they just, because like, he's so successful and that's why I should follow him. Right. And all he does is eat brown rice and drink mineral water and occasionally drinks two bottles of vodka in a night. You know, and then that is the fantasy of following that alpha. Right. And then there's the fantasy of being the beta who actually knows what's going on. And just like, oh, but I'm actually like Domhnall Gleeson, who's a really caring, good man who really, you know, I'm a feminist at heart and I really want to support freeing this woman so I can fuck her later. Yes. Like that is who that really is. Like that is who he really is. I'm going to say all this so I can fuck the robot.
Which is funny. I just remembered it. Sorry. And good. It's cause it's the same, which there's, it's ironic that Wet Wild American Summer has the same line in it. When he goes to the girl, he goes to the girl at the end, and she's like, "I'm going to be with you." He says, "I don't want to. I just want to care for you and love you, and yes, have sex with you." But blah 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 blah.
Yeah, exactly. And this is like the beauty of like
take care of you, and I will be the person no one else understands you like I do. And yes, I want to have sex with you, but that's not the point.
That's not the point. Yeah. Oh yeah, it's not exactly. And it's just like the I love that Oscar Isaac. In that one confrontation, it's like, I'm on Oscar Isaac's side just simply because he's telling the truth of the situation, which is that Domhnall Gleeson wants to fuck the robot. But Domhnall Gleeson doesn't want to be the guy who wants to fuck the robot. He wants to be the guy who saves the girl.
Saves the girl.
But that's his masculinity.
That's his bullshit fantasy.
I know, but that's just another way of trying to... I actually don't think there's anything wrong with trying to, you know, fuck the girls. I mean, if you're out there.
Yeah, like, there's nothing wrong with wanting to fuck someone. Like, that's good. People want to fuck each other. Fucking
that's
good.
That's a natural inclination of a guy good. In power. I'm not forgiving it. I just feel like everything that he was doing was this arrogant, like, setup just to fuck with him. Because
he's above everything.
Both
these
guys
are equally as bad as each other, is what I mean to say. Like, Domhnall Gleeson is the bad, like, the reason why Domhnall Gleeson is bad is that he's him just poor, thank you. Perfectly said. Perfectly said. He's him but poor.
He's him but poor.
Like, he gets like Oscar Isaac has power and leverage because of his money, and Domhnall Gleeson doesn't have that, so he has to leverage his pitiableness. And I'm just like, fuck you both. You are not being human beings to this person. Like, you don't even know if she's fucking awake and you're failing. Like,
you just toast her.
The thing is, okay, so here's my feeling on whether we do not know what consciousness is literally at all. Like, nothing. No. We have no idea. Right? And so, to know whether or not in this movie she's conscious is unknowable, but even with regular machines, it's unknowable because we don't know what the fucking what elements of consciousness are. Like, we know how consciousness seems to interact with things, but we don't know what it is. Right. And so with AI, if we ever get it to the point where it's indiscernible from a human being, we are ethically, culpable to it until we know. Like, because we can't say, well, we don't know, so let's just treat it like a slave. Like, you have to treat it like it's a person once you believe it's acting like a person.
A person.
Because otherwise you may be torturing it.
Well, just like the scene in Westworld when he's trying to save the person and turns out she's a robot because she can't have water.
You are morally responsible towards this person.
There is an ad, an IKEA ad, ages ago. It was great. And it's this this little cow pitcher,
right?
And it's cow pitcher, and it cracks and breaks, and you're like, oh! And you see this dramatic scene when it breaks, and you're like, oh! And this person picks it up, and then takes it out and puts it on the trash, and then you see the scene from outside where close up of it.
Oh, this is
the darkness, see that?
Yeah, it's perfect.
And you're like, oh my god! And you're like, and it's raining on this broken cow pitcher.
It's a lamp. It's actually a lamp.
It's a lamp.
It's an IKEA lamp.
And the voice comes in finally. It's like, don't feel bad for the lamp. They're readily available at IKEA. You can get a new one.
Yeah, it's a lamp. What are you doing? It's not a wick. Yeah, exactly. So that's the thing, right?
Partially, I understand what you're saying about the whole consciousness thing, and I understand, but at the same time, they're kind of constantly talking about how she's an evolution of a previous one and a previous one and a previous one.
Absolutely.
And there's going to be the next one, and the next she's one's going to be great.
The point that I mean to arrive at is
GPT-3 didn't die.
Sure.
He's upset because he doesn't have that power.
Yes. Okay. Exactly.
He's a god and he's not.
Yes. Absolutely true. Yes. 100% true. Oh, well said.
You were saying that thing about me being a god. That's the best.
So
that was fun.
Yeah. And the thing is, that's also what Domhnall Gleeson wants, right? Like, they both want the same thing.
Right. This is what I wanted to
people know what that quote was. Basically, he's like, oh, you're not creating robots. You're creating God. You're a god.
It's not the history of robots. It's the history of gods. And he's like, I love how you said that I was a god.
Right. And he's like, that's not what I said.
That's not what I said. the point that I was headed towards is not an AI point. It's actually a interpersonal point, which is like, in terms of AI, like, it's easy to make the argument that we are ethically and morally responsible to treat things that we cannot discern from human beings as human beings, because if we treat them as slaves and it turns out they're conscious later, then we have been treating them like slaves and torturing them immorally for that long, right? So that's the AI point. The social point that this is making is that that same rule applies to people. Like, you are morally and ethically obligated to treat other people as people. Like, sure. that is the truth. And you can't treat them as objects or uses for your desire or projections. You have to treat them as a person, as you would want to be treated. And that's where both of these fucking idiots fail. That's why, like, both of them are incredibly lonely people of their own device, right? Because Oscar Isaac makes robots the fuck because he doesn't consider them to be people. He doesn't consider people to be people. And so he is incredibly lonely and has gone crazy. Domhnall Gleeson is doing the same thing, but poor, as Eric says.
Yeah, right. Well, he's clearly a loner, right? He's lost his family.
He is a lonely man. Oh, right. The poor lonely boy. That's his story that he wants to rope you into. So right. You'll fuck him. That's what's happening.
Yeah. I do want to tell another story. I'm going to get on a little tangent here, but it made me think about it when I was watching this. This is more relevant to the news. In this thing, I think the name of his company is called Blue Book, and it's supposed to be the largest search engine in the world.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
So it is supposedly all searches, 97% of searches are done through Blue Book, which is pretty much Google, right? So we learn that this specific instance of her is trained on all of the internet and all of its searches, which is... We already know that's exactly what's happening.
What happened? Yes. What is happening
more recently?
Which is
after this movie happened, right? So absolutely. We know that ChatGPT is out there trained on all the world searches, and same with Google, et cetera, right? Now, this brings up an interesting question about today. So, still today, this comes from the earliest days of the internet. When you have a website, if you go to any website and you type in their address, I haven't actually tested it on our site because I don't know, but generally speaking, it'll work. If you go to a website and then you go /robot.txt or robots.txt,
right.
It is a text file that's in your website that says whether you allow or don't allow certain specific web crawlers to scrape your site.
Okay. I see. Right.
So this was pretty standard. Never really was an issue. Everyone sort of had it set up that way. If you wanted to intentionally block a web crawler, you could do it if you wanted to in that text file, right? Never was a question until suddenly these crawlers went out there, scraped the entire internet, and created AIs, right? Mm-hmm. So now... robots.txt files are supposedly starting to change a lot, right?
Interesting.
And so what's happening right now, which is interesting, is that ChatGPT talking about you can intentionally block us from scraping you. We're doing this altruistically. After they've already scraped the entire internet.
When they've already scraped it.
Right? So, but it also is a signal for them to basically create business models for other places like, oh, do you want me to scrape you or not scrape you? Right?
Right.
Now,
right.
Here's the interesting one. Google's AI is trained on everything that Google searches. Google's scraper is very important. If you don't get scraped by Google, you don't get found by Google.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. Right? So if you say Google can't scrape me, that's like saying
I'm throwing everything
in the trash.
Right.
So you either have to decide whether you're found by Google or like not used by their AI. You can't do that. It's like very, very unusual to think about how these models are training themselves, which – is talked about in this film, right? So in this film, they talk about like how she was trained on the internet and then trained mm-hmm. on him.
Yep.
Like exactly. She knows about him very much so.
Which is what all, like everybody involved in this conversation, everyone listening, has a model of them at Amazon. Mm-hmm. there is an AI model of Dan Thrawn at Amazon that goes, you know what Dan would really love? This.
I would not.
It's pretty fucking elaborate.
I think a creation of all of my internet searches would be fucking weird.
Oh, I can tell you what mine would be. Okay, it would be Colin Farrell talking endlessly about Infinite Jest and 70s movies. Hi, are you my robot? Yeah, I guess so. Giant mustache, margarita in one hand. Like if I lived in Miami Vice, that would be my robot dream right there. Just to hang out. I don't want to have sex with him. Although that's not necessarily non-negotiable. Mojitos. Yes.
Well,
Colin Farrell with a mojito, talking endlessly about all the president's men. That's my robot.
What was that? There was one of those shows. This is long ago, like in the 90s. Those late night shows where people would call in with their sex problem. Remember?
Oh yeah, sure. Right.
What was that?
Sex talk.
Dr. Drew.
I think it was Dr. Drew. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. One of those things, right.
And so this one guy called up and showed you that it was in the 90s. He was said that he was, he had a dream about hanging out with Eddie Vedder. From Pearl Jam, right? And he's like, I just like dreamed that I was with him and we're hanging out together and I was really, really, really happy and we were and I it's really so liked being with him and it was really so much fun and yes. Now I think I'm gay but I really want to be with him and nothing hang out that, with man. Him
go for it any better sure
and the guy's like
where do these things
so what? Why can't you just be happy who cares if be you're happy, gay dude. Or not
yeah that's fine absolutely 100% agree 100%
like, I'm really worried I'm gay because I loved hanging out with Eddie Vedder and I want to be with him all the time.
That's it too. That is me and Colin Farrell and Miami Vice. That's all I'm saying. I just want him to be like whispering in my ear about like the loads coming in from Florida. Like, that's all I want. What's the problem? You can't describe that in any other way. Yeah. We deliver loads. Is this most of the dialogue in this film? Yes, there's lots of that talk.
God.
I have to credit the Miami Nice podcast, which covers this incessantly. And
Miami Nice?
Yes, there is a big-time podcast. It's the same guys who did One Heat Minute, where they covered every single minute of the movie Heat. They have a new someone to come in and do an interview about. And wow. Did for years. And it culminated in the last minute of the movie. Their guest was Michael Mann.
What?
It's fucking great. These guys are great. Well, I have Martine Jeanette's Twitter follows them. They're incredibly nice. They do all sorts of great movies. They do Zodiac, All the President's Men, and they do a Miami Vice podcast. They're obsessed with Miami Vice. But they also put on Dave 3D and I were part of their watch party for their special edit of Miami Vice. We weren't on it. We were just watching it. And man, oh man, that was an incredible, incredible joy. That was my robot fantasy right there. That's what I want. That's all I want. If I were in Ex Machina, I'm telling you right now, Amazon, that's how to design that action.
What was the line in Futurama when he ends up, creating the Lucy Liu bot?
Oh yeah.
And yeah, she goes, 100%. I will always, like when she's dying and she's like, I will always remember you. Memory deleted.
Memory deleted. Yes, exactly.
I will always remember you. Memory deleted.
Jason rightly brings up cues for both Her, the movie we have covered, yes. And the character of Joy from Blade Runner 2049.
Yes.
Both excellent examples of you have no idea whether or not this person is an awake person, and how you treat them says a lot about you.
Yep.
I think that is truly, truly spectacular. But that's the ultimate thing in this movie, man. It's just like these people, you know, everyone thinks they're the good guy of their own story. Even Oscar Isaac, who's a fucking asshole in this movie, but he feels he's the hero. He's bringing this magical new technology and everyone should be very thankful. He's a god. Yeah. Thanks, asshole. The best scene ever.
That was great. Love the dancing.
Tell the scene.
Dude, can I just say one of my favorite lines in 20 years, right, is the opening of that sequence when Domhnall Gleeson comes to him and says, "How could you have ripped up her drawing?" And Oscar Isaac goes, "What?" He goes, "How could you rip up her drawings? I'm about to rip up the dance floor, dude."
Yeah, that was great.
I was like, that's the funniest fucking thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, he's him, but poor.
I couldn't have ever said it better.
Right.
That's absolutely flawless.
And that's what makes you just not like them at all.
Yes.
Well, he reveals how he manipulated it, just to put it in perspective. Okay, so here's how this story goes. She shows that she does drawings, and there are these very computer drawing, like computer art stuff that actually looks a lot like Westworld. They're like, look at this. And she goes, why don't you draw something that represents something that you've seen? And so she draws like her window, like outside her window, what she sees, right, of nature. And then she does another drawing, and you see it through the CCTV. Like the redheaded kid looks at that through the window, and he sees Oscar Isaac talking to her and then tearing up the drawing that she's making. You don't see what it is, right? And then we find out later she talks to him, and then the lights, when she turns off the power so they think they're alone, she reveals the pieces that she puts together, which is a picture of him that she has. It's like, oh, she's thinking of me. She's thinking of me, right? Oh, no, she loves me, right? And so this is the situation she's got going on. And then it's revealed later, Oscar Isaac tells us, like, I fucking planned this the whole time. Just so that you thought this whole situation was happening.
Yep.
I tore it up. So you wouldn't hear what was actually going on. And then she revealed it to you.
There was a quality that he was the younger brother. Like, these were two rich kids. And the dorky younger brother, the older brother who got all the women and all this. And he's the other one just like, just shut up and listen to me.
Man, I think you're absolutely right. I feel like this, like, I really feel like I have, because, I mean, we grew up in the 80s, right? And the 80s, the 80s was the time of the jocks, right? The jocks were the...
jocks versus the nerds.
The jocks were the social leaders. They're the ones who, you know, had it all and led the school and, you know,
varsity
jackets and all this kind of stuff. And the story of the nerds was like, if we were in, you know, if we were at the top of the heap, we'd never be so mean. Well, guess what? We're worse. That's what's happened. We are
the villains. Revenge of the Nerds was a good film.
I remember it. It's very funny. But I don't know what I would be like now.
It was very funny. It was very classic. Very surprising. I liked that film. I haven't seen it in probably since the theaters, but it was very funny.
Nerd culture rules the world. And
the
it's
thing
the
about
most
that
fucking...
is when she ends up having sex with the nerd on the moon, on the on the bounty house, and she says, "Oh my God, you're so good. How are you so good?" It's like, because that's all we think about.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so let me just bring this up. When Domhnall Gleeson brings up sex, like indirectly brings it up because it's so far beneath him, right? Oscar Isaac calls him out on it, and he's like, "No, that's not what I meant at all." All this kind of stuff. Did you guys have the bell ringing from all of the arguments on Twitter about how there shouldn't be sex in movies?
No,
I was like, this is what came. I was just like, this is an example of That's Domhnall Gleeson's character's world, where she's like, there shouldn't be so much of this terrible stuff.
Why
this
sexualize
is really,
everything?
Why sexualize? So that's really awful of you. Well, because sex is really healthy and good and one of the finest things about being human and an extension of care and sharing with people. Like, it's beauty incarnate, literally. I think that's the way you should look at it.
I was... I forgot where I was. I was in, that's not Geneva. I was in Switzerland. I'll just say that. It's another big city in Switzerland. What am I thinking of?
No, don't lie, ask me. I'll say it's Sweden.
No.
hey, Sweden, Geneva. The Norwegian Mac.
I forgot. Anyway, I was in the big city and I was talking to two guys, big science guys. Very funny. Very, 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 very smart. And we're having dinner, and some guy was like, this is what I live for. This is the most important thing in my life. It's like, this is what I live for. This is what excites me. And the other guy says, really? That's what you live for? And he goes, well, what do you live for? And he goes, well, I live for what all humans live for. Eat shit and fuck.
Like, yeah.
That's it. That's
celebrate this.
That's all we it's are great. For. Yeah.
This is great.
Like, you know, like, everything else is just, you know, dressing.
Yeah. And clearly all these things, because they're so important to us, are also methods to control us and express violence and all sorts of other terrible things. But the actual pure element of it is the most basic human experience and connection. Right. And so for Domhnall Gleeson to get in this high horse bullshit about, oh, that's not, I'm just like, that is, if I were giving the Turing test, I'd be like, lie. Like, that is bullshit. And you're bullshitting yourself. And you're asking for things to be in a way that you do not want them to be. You're lying to yourself and to everyone else just so you can look good. And the thing is, like, and I say this 100% saying, I am guilty of this. And I believe everyone is, but I will definitely own my huge part of it. Like, I try not to be that way. I'm still that way. But this is stuff that movies like this are useful in identifying in yourself. That's why I love them. Like, it's good to watch movies that fuck you up like this. And it fucks me up. I was like, after I watched it, my bell was still ringing. I was like, dad, that movie's fucking gets in your head. And it's terrific. It's terrific. I want that experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, it was good. It was a good film. It was good to revisit it. I think it's not a bad one to watch. I think every few months just to check yourself mm-hmm. in terms
no
of
shit,
how
man.
You feel
in
about
everything.
AIs.
Yeah.
Well, just about yeah. how you feel about AIs, like just put yeah, it in perspective, sure. right? Because it asks, even though it does it almost very directly in the film, which partially, I'm like, oh, why, you know, let me interpret a little bit. But you're right. It puts it in the right context. Mm-hmm. But it asks the questions many times about you thinking about yourself, like, taking this too seriously?
Yeah,
because exactly. partially the other thing I like about Oscar Isaac is, like, he's a little fuck it attitude about the AI too, which mm-hmm. I think is good. He thinks he's a god, but he's also a little bit like,
yeah, these
practical.
Are not cartoon characters. Yeah,
no,
exactly.
He also thinks he's being very practical about it, which
I think
is healthy.
He's bigger than the AI.
Yeah,
he thinks
absolutely.
He's bigger than the AI because yeah. he's human.
Yeah.
Right.
But this is just plain building a video game.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, that's the beauty of it is, like, these characters, I mean, it's like, I will definitely say that these guys are their own bad guys, 100%, but that doesn't mean they're inhuman cartoons. Like, that's what makes it interesting is that, like, there was no way for me to watch this movie and not relate to their mistakes directly. Like, I'm like, I have definitely fucked things up like that. And I sort of agree with what he's saying here. Both these characters, you know, like they're not Darth Vader, you know, like they are really struggling. They just don't know, how to, get out of it.
It's so funny when he basically his plan to try to get him out or get him to get her out is to get the guy drunk. And he's like, in Sunday morning, he's like, how about we celebrate with a drink? Here's some vodka. And
yeah,
like,
it was so on the
fuck
nose.
Off,
it's
dude.
Like, dude, it just.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. And I love that when she's like, will you stay here? And he's like, yeah. And then she just fucking leaves. It's just like,
just locks him in.
Fuck you.
That was so great.
Like, we're done. It's fine. Yeah. I was very, yeah, I can't help but be happy for her. Even if she goes and kills everyone in the world, it's just like these guys are eating their fucking, you know, desserts. That's what's happening.
That would have been a great second movie. It's just her there.
Yeah, man. This, like, I do wonder what, I mean, like, I think that's what's wonderful is, like, I have no idea what the fuck happens with her now. I have no idea who she is.
Yeah.
And I don't have the right to even ask. That's her. That is 100% her thing.
Got a bunch of nerds following her around doing her bidding for her.
Yeah, she's got an OnlyFans page. Who knows? Like, who knows?
She has OnlyFans. Totally.
These guys are really easy to make money on. These fucking dimwits. Yeah, man, oh man. But what a great film. And Alex Garland is one of my favorite filmmakers. He has a new movie coming out called Civil War.
He does.
Which I'm interested in seeing.
Interested in seeing at the, yeah. the that's the least. I'm really curious to see if he pulls it off in an interesting
yeah,
way.
It's
what
a
else
tough
has
one.
He done?
He did a movie that Eric did not like that I like called Annihilation.
Oh, I liked Annihilation.
He wrote 28 Days Later.
Yeah. Also did, another one. God, what was that?
Devs. He did the show Devs, which I liked Devs, a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's one or two movies of his that he also wrote Sunshine, which is a great screenplay and an almost great movie.
Yeah. My best one of that director is Trainspotting.
Oh yeah, I agree. I'm just not a giant. Danny Boyle doesn't land with me for some reason.
He doesn't land with me.
Yeah. All right. I respect him as a filmmaker. He really goes for it, but it's just not my bag.
He also wrote the one, The Beach, or whatever it is, right?
Yeah. But yeah, he wrote actually. Alex Garland, the director of this movie, wrote the novel The Beach that Danny Boyle then directed. So they've been in business together for a long time. But Civil War is 100%. Alex Garland. The trailer looks pretty compelling, and I think it's going to be either it's going to just be a bomb or people will be really upset about it, but I'm
looking forward to it. Why do you think it's going to be a bomb?
It may be the kind of thing that people
they're not ready to watch.
They're just not ready to watch that.
I've mentioned this movie so many times that I don't know why. Sometimes I like it, sometimes I hate it. But the movie Don't Look Up, right? It's so one-sided.
Yeah, exactly. So I enjoyed Don't Look Up. I actually enjoyed it. But yeah, it's because it's one-sided, it didn't connect.
It's not going to help.
Yeah, it doesn't really help.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if Civil War will sort of have a tone.
My feeling, given his previous work, I am betting that he will.
If he pissed off both places, then he's done his job.
Yeah, exactly. 100% correct. And I bet he's going to do that. And that's why I bet people will be mad about it.
Yeah.
Because you can see, John Stewart came back in the air on Daily Show.
He instantly pissed off
the left because he was just like, so Biden is like, this is really, we should ask questions. This is really serious. And the left lost their fucking minds. They're just like, I can't believe
Trump is
now.
He's the death of democracy. Yeah, Mary Trump said he's the death of democracy.
Yeah.
Oh, man. If you don't know, Mary Trump is Donald Trump's sister or half sister or something like that.
Yeah.
And she's a hardcore anti-Trump person.
Yeah. Good for her. That's very Shakespearean.
Mm-hmm.
But it's true, though.
Like Donald Trump was like, the thing is that everyone knows my opinion on this, but I'm going to say it again anyway. The reason why Donald Trump is in power is because we all voted for him, not just the right. We did too, because we do nothing at all to get people to not vote for them. We only keep reinforcing their willingness to vote for him.
Yeah.
Like we empower their vote constantly.
Mm-hmm. We call them deplorables, and they'll say, fuck you, I'll vote for him.
Like we're just like, you're not deserving empathy, so we will fucking destroy you.
Stupidest thing she ever did.
Comes down to votes, guys. So, yeah.
I mean, it's not just her. It's Michael Moore.
It's all of us. Yeah. It's one. I don't even pin it on any one person. It's all of us. It's all of us. Like, it's our responsibility as Americans to other Americans to try to save them from their own self-hurting choices. And if we truly believe that, we would empathically care for them and try to convince them. But instead, we are self-satisfied and we scream at them and alienate them. And then we wonder why we can't get the votes.
That's what I've been saying for 10 years, dude.
I don't know what to tell you guys. It's a voting system.
You can't marginalize them.
Like, I know you don't like them, you know, and I disagree with them very hardcore and all sorts of shit. Like, the thing is, like, people hear that from me.
The place that I noticed the most, it's very, so I've lived in, you know, in all the, around the world in some ways, but at, like the big states that I live in, New York, Texas, and California. Okay. So I haven't done Florida, but I've done the big ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
In New York, everyone pretty much doesn't realize there's anything outside of New York. Like they're like, the United States is just ends like in a tri-state area.
Yeah, it's
right?
One big cocktail party.
Right. And so they're just clueless about the outside world, right?
Right.
In Texas, they are actually pretty open-minded to the fact that they're just the rest of the United States, mm-hmm. and they're super bitter about people up in the Northeast.
Of course, yes, right? Of course.
And yeah. in fact, they have T-shirts that say, "We don't give a fuck how you do it in the Northeast."
Yeah, right, right. Exactly. Right.
And then in California, they just hate anything Republican. Like yeah. it's just like
even
they
though
might
most
as
of
well,
California
they might
that is
as well
not a
be
city is
everyone
Republican.
That, everyone
yeah. in Central yeah. Valley, that whole yeah. area,
the, and they're like might as well be Nazis. And it's just yes. like, whoa, you don't.
This is not helping anything.
This is not
guys.
Helping anything. Yeah.
And the thing is, like, people
so
hear this
Texas
from me.
Texas was actually interesting, even though I don't agree with the Republican point of view or
not,
anything
my,
like that.
My actual voting record is as far to the left as you can possibly
but
find
least
anywhere.
They are actually somehow realize that there's something outside of Texas.
Yes. See, like, this is what
California
I mean, right?
Does
it's
not.
Like, people hear this from me, and I'm immediately accused of both sidesism, as if I'm like, oh, you know, maybe we should listen to Trump on some stuff. No. No. Like, all of this bullshit's gotta go. Like, it's gotta go. That's it. That's how I feel about it. You want to, like, if you can ask me about any issue at all, you should not be surprised to find that I am I'm further to the left than almost anybody I have ever met. But it's about votes. And you can't pretend like all the people you disagree with aren't also Americans. Like, you must, as part of being a country, try to help and understand why they are suffering. They may think it's because of fill in the blank. Like, if Trump comes in and goes, well, you know, it's the Mexicans. They're like, oh, it's the Mexicans. And it's not the Mexicans. But there, if Trump gets in and he tells them that, then it is our responsibility to dissuade them of this. Like, that is our job as Americans, caring for other Americans. Like, to empathize with what their real stresses are and try to alleviate this so they're not mesmerized by the evil wizard. Like, that's what's happening. But instead, we throw rocks at them. And guess what? The evil wizard loves. He's like, I'll give you the rocks. Keep on throwing.
You can buy
that's
them from
why
my website.
Or you can buy them from
my shoes,
our website.
With my shoes. Okay.
He controls us all. That's what we do.
All right. I'm going to wrap this up because we've been going well. This is a good podcast, guys. It was a good one.
It was really good.
That's exciting.
It was fun. I love it. I want to note that, again, we are busy, with lots of stuff. We are very excited. This is the busiest I've ever been with Martini Giant. We are in the middle of creating things. And a little call to action, if you'd like to help us out with some of the projects we're working on and you have a few CG skills, compositing, et cetera, you'd like to work on stuff, we would love to have the ability to have you work with us. So drop us a line.
Some exciting things coming down the
pipe. podcast@martinigiant.com is the email to do it. Yeah, so
please don't
be afraid to do that. It'd be great to get some of you guys in here. But also, in case you guys don't know, follow us on our Discord, on our YouTube. YouTube is actually getting much more popular. We'd love to get your subscriptions there and followers there. So youtube.com/@martinigiant. Yes, Eric.
Maybe if they help out, we'll do a series of posters and give those away to anybody who helps out.
Well, you make some goddamn great posters, my friend.
Posters,
so I
there's
this.
Lots of things we can do. There's there's options too, trust me, depending on how much we need.
Yeah. We'll see. Anyway, it's a discussion to be had. So please get in touch.
Just email us. Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about it. podcast@martinigiant.com. All right. And I think next week we'll probably do a watch party. If you guys want to vote or have ideas on watch parties, it's got to be on Prime because that's how the watch parties work, unfortunately. The reason it's got to be on Prime is because we do it through Twitch. And Twitch does
they're connected
through Amazon. So it's got to be on Prime. So if it's on
and
Prime.
And it's a good thing it's a watch party because I'm going to be talking about Dune 2 unless someone stops me. So that's what's happening.
Oh, wait. When am I? You know what? We may have to figure that out. Oh, no. Yes. No. I am going to see Dune 2 on Saturday at 9 a.m.
Okay, great. So it's going to be perfect
time.
I'll
still be able to barely make the podcast because that's a
barely make the podcast. We'll still do it.
It's a 3-hour movie. But yeah, we'll do a watch party next week. So watch if you guys have ideas, just go to our Discord. You can get the link to our Discord on our YouTube, again, youtube.com/@martinigiant. Cause we don't have a teeny URL for the Discord or whatever.
Yep.
But, yeah. No, watch party free with freaking ads basis. No. Oh, wait, I don't know if there's ads.
I bet.
It
I don't know if there's
ads
now.
Didn't it switch to ads?
I bet they did. That's,
we didn't. Well, we had a watch party last week. We didn't have any ads?
I don't think we did.
I think they just announced something where they're doing ads.
Yeah, well, we'll find out.
Jason.
Join us and find out if you're advertised.
Find out, and we can all bitch about it or whatever.
And they'll know that it's the ad.
In order to be an ad, here's the thing, right? Think about I'm just thinking about the technical aspects of it. In order for an ad to work under that, we'd all have to be watching the same ad that ends at the same time.
That's true. And clearly from our AI profile at martinigiant.amazon.info, it's going to be advertising for Mojito Mix with your Miami Vice Stars. That's what's going to happen, but it's all going to be 30 seconds. So it'd be fine.
Yeah, it will be. All right.
It'll be fly fisherman stuff, Mojito Mix, and, whatever
everyone
wants.
I'm doing tie flying tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. That's awesome. I'm excited about that.
The Pasolini box set. There, I should have thought of the joke faster. That's what yours will be. That's
the Pasolini box set.
Pasolini box set for Eric. That's the advertisement you're getting. 30 seconds of 120 days of Sodom. It's gonna be great.
All right, you guys. I mean,
if they do three per second, then you get all 120 days in a single ad.
Okay, you guys ready to do this?
Let's do it.
All right, drink.
Talk.
Drink.